We're at that order of business of request to concur with Senate amendments to House bills. The first message for our consideration is message number 193 on House Bill 23, Representative Kasparyk.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move concurrence on message number 193, House Bill 28, Cease and Transfer Program Local Government Funding. The amendments made in the Senate really just eliminated some duplicative language, and I would urge your aye vote.
Any discussion? Question being called. We're voting on a motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 28. A majority of the elected members is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Allen.
Aye.
Baker.
Aye.
Baldwin. Baldwin. Barlow.
Aye.
Berger.
Excuse.
Berger, excuse. Blackburn.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Clem. Connolly.
Aye.
Dayton.
Aye.
Edmonds.
Aye.
Edwards.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Escobel.
Aye.
Freeman.
Freeman.
Freeman excused. Gay excused. Greer.
Aye.
Halverson.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Excuse.
Harvey excused. Hunt. Hunt. Hunt excused. Yagi. Yagi excused. Jennings. Kasparyk. Kinner. Kinner. Kinner excused. Kirkbride. Croker. Crone. Larson Lloyd. Larson Dan. Lindholm. Lindholm. Lockhart. Laux. Madden. McKim. Miller. Moniz. Nicholas. Northrup. Northrup excused. Paxton. Paxton excused. Pelkey. Petrov. Piperinen. Piperinen excused. Pennell. Reeder. Schwartz. Summers. Summers excused. Steinmetz. Steinmetz excused. Stubson. Throne. Throne excused. Walters. Wilson. Wilson, aye or no? Winters. Zwanitzer Dan. Zwanitzer Dave. Mr. Speaker. Baldwin. I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 47 aye, 13 excused.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 28. The next message for our consideration is message number 194 on House Bill 32. Chairman Zwanitzer Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move concurrence on message 194 to House Bill 32 and ask for your favorable vote. Our good colleagues down the hall realized that there were three clauses without a comma, and so what they did is just delete the term establishing exclusion from and put including in the catch title, so it didn't actually have any substantial effect on the bill, but I guess it's better grammar as we move forward in the catch title. So be happy to argue with anybody. Otherwise, I'd ask for your favorable vote.
Any discussion? Question being called. We're voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 32. A majority of the elected members is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Allen.
Aye.
Baker.
Aye.
Baldwin.
Aye.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger excused. Blackburn.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Clem.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Dayton.
Aye.
Edmonds.
Aye.
Edwards.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Escobel.
Aye.
Freeman excused. Gay, excused. Greer. Halverson. Harshman. Harvey. Hunt. Hunt, excused. Yagi. Yagi, excused. Jennings. Kasparik. Kinner. Kinner, excused. Kirkbride. Croker. Crone. Larson Lloyd. Larson Dan. Lindholm. Lockhart. Laux. Madden. McKim. Miller. Moniz. Nicholas. Northrup. Excused. Paxton. Excused. Pelkey. Petroff. Pieperinen. Excused. Pinnell. Reeder. Schwartz. Summers. Excused. Steinmetz. Excused. Stubson. Throne. Excused. Walters. Wilson. Winters. Swanitzer Dan. Swanitzer Dave. Mr. Speaker, I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 48 aye, 12 excused.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 32. The next message for our consideration is message number 195 on House Bill 52. Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd move concurrence on message 195 to House Bill 52, and I would ask for your favorable aye vote. Members, the Senate made a technical correction to a House Standing Committee amendment. We deleted basically a portion of a study of school buildings. We moved it up to effective immediately and did that in Agency 27 of the budget. I think it's 27. And members, so the numbering didn't get right when it crossed over to the Senate. So the way the bill hit the Senate, it made the $80 million appropriation that we appropriated here effective immediately. And there's no need for that, and that could only put us in a cash pool thing that we don't need to be. So the Senate actually improved the bill. So thank you.
Any discussion? No reaction to that? We're voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 52. A majority of the elected members is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Allen. Baker. Baldwin. Barlow. Berger. Excused. Blackburn. Blake. Burkhart. Byrd. Campbell. Kennedy. Clem. Connolly. Dayton. Edmonds. Edwards. Eklund, Escobel, Freeman, excused, Gay, excused, Greer, Halverson, Harshman, Harvey, Hunt, excused, Gagy, excused, Jennings, Kasparik, Kinner, excused, Kirkbride, Croker, Crone, Larson Lloyd, Larson Dan, Lindholm, Lockhart, Laux, Madden, Madden, McKim, Miller, Moniz, Nicholas, Northrup, excused, Paxton, excused, Pelkey, Petroff, Pieperinen, excused, Pinnell, Reeder, Schwartz, Summers, excused, Steinmetz, excused, Stubson, Throne, excused, Walters, Wilson, Winters, Swanitzer Dan, Swanitzer Dave, Mr. Speaker, Nicholas, excused. I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 47 aye, 13 excused.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 52. Messages from the Senate.
Message number 200, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading. House Bill 20, State Public Purpose Investments Dash Reporting, Ayes 30, No 0, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 201, Mr. Speaker, House Bill 21, State Public Purpose Investment Revisions, passed in third reading by an amended form. Ayes 30, no 0. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting various amendments signed by Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 202. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 31, Uniform Securities Act. Ayes 30, no 0. Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 203. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 46, Investment of Workers' Compensation Account. Ayes 30, no 0. Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 204. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 54, Treasury Offset Program, Statutory Reference Amendments. Ayes 30, no 0. Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 205. Concurrence requested, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 60, State Health Facility Missions, Statutory Compliance. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form. Ayes 29, noes 1. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 206, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 603, Healthcare Facility Receivership Act. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form. Ayes 23, noes 7. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 207, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 88, ETS-0 Based Budget Sunset. Ayes 20, noes 10. Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Conference Committee on Senate File 36, Stubson Chair, Greer and Walters. Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom is referred Senate File 72, 70-mile-an-hour speed limit dash state highways, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation and a due pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhart, Conley, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom is referred Senate File 88, Engross State Lands Within Grand Teton National Park, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation and a due pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baldwin, Barlow, Freeman, Kirkbride, Petroff, and Schwartz, Larson, and Steinmetz voted no, and Representative Clem excused, signed by Representative Petroff, Chairman.
Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, just a note on schedule on the general file. We're going to, if you'd look at your list, we're going to move just a couple of the bills. We will move Senate File 41 to the top of the list, so it will be heard first. Right after that, we will move Senate File 32, and then we will proceed with the balance of the list as presented. So, again, Senate File 41, Senate File 32, and then the balance of the list. And, Mr. Speaker, with that, I'd move that the House resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Representative Winters.
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File Number 41. The reading clerk, who, if you read his name in the phone book, reads as More Rich. The reading clerk will read the bill.
It's late, isn't it? Senate File 41 from Appropriations, an act relating to state-funded facilities, providing appropriations for state-funded capital construction for the biennium commencing July 1st, 2016 and ending June 30th, 2018, continuing and codifying state facility accounts as specified, continuing the task force on Department of Health facilities, providing definitions, providing for conditions and other appropriations, repealing provisions related to the University of Wyoming matching fund requirements in prior capital construction appropriations, providing for funding of mineral-impacted road projects, providing appropriations, providing for carryover appropriations, and providing effective dates. Mr. Chairman, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom is referred Senate File 41 in gross state-funded capital construction, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhart, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, Stubson, Connolly voted no, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman, and further reviewed, I think, maybe not. No, I'm sorry.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Harshman.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 41 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. Mr. Chairman and members, appreciate the Speaker Pro Tem moving this to the front. This is one of our five appropriations bills, but this is one that has, you know, more appropriations in it than we probably saw in a couple others, you know, the local government bill and the AML bill. So I appreciate the opportunity to do this while we're all kind of fresh back from lunch as we work a afternoon of general file. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to, if I could, just call on a question on the amendment later because I think it'll be explained as we go through the bill, and then I'll cover the amendment again, and we'll maybe take a vote on that a little later. Okay?
You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question?
Actually, Mr. Chairman, I just want to I wasn't clear. I would like to defer the vote on that until we explain the bill.
Yes, sir. Please proceed.
Okay. Thank you. Sorry, I didn't explain that very well. Okay, members, if you start on page 2 of the bill, and we'll just go page by page, this bill now that we – these bill – this program would have normally been – has been, I should say, in the general operations budget. And so – we tried to get the general operations House Bill 1 down to those constitutional general operations. Well, you read the LSO memo, capital construction, even though it is regular, it's not necessarily the yearly kind of ongoing expenses. And so that's why it's in a separate bill. So much of this bill you'll see is carryover language from previous budget bills that it's been that way for years. So on page 2, the first account that set up, State Facilities Construction Account, that's probably been in the last three budget bills. And that refers to the facilities in Evanston and Lander primarily. And we've got about $35 million saved in that account over the last several years. There's going to be more appropriations to this account in the bill. The next account that's being set up is the University of Wyoming Science Initiative. And this account was in last year's budget bill. And then the next one on page 3 is Casper State Facilities account, and that was also in a previous budget bill. If you look on page 2, line 10, where it says legislative appropriation, I actually could read line 9, any amounts that are appropriated to these accounts will only be expended upon legislative appropriation. So we'll look at this again before, but these are counts to segregate those monies. And that same language is on line 20 on page 2 and also on line 8 of page 3. Then on page 3, section 2 of the bill, these are just definitions that have always been in the budget bill for capital construction. Appropriation, approved budget, you flip over, it shows the accounts on page 4, federal funds, private funding, special revenue you'll see in this bill, funds identified by footnote, and then particularly T5. This one doesn't appear as often because we have an active admissions permanent land fund for our state penitentiary, and that's where that will come from. You'll see that reference later. Now, on line 14, 15, and 16, Romanette 8, the definition unappropriated is unobligated and unrestricted federal funds, means funds received by the state of Wyoming from the federal government. And so this is really a safety check. If we have some federal funds that come to Wyoming, say ARRA funds or, you know, pennies from heaven somewhere that just come to our state, they're going to go to the general fund, and we're going to be able to appropriate them. They won't just flow, and the governor would be able to authorize those. We put a similar section in the budget back in, I guess it was probably 2009, and we kind of knew the ARRA funds were coming, and so we wanted to make sure we appropriated those funds as the legislative branch of government. So then there's some subparagraphs under there. And paragraph A would be like the ARRA funds. Paragraph B, required to be expended for purposes other than projects. Title 24 is the Highway Department on top page 5, and Title 35 is DEQ. Okay, and then the rest, then on paragraph C, these funds will be, any other funds then that don't go to the Highway Department or DEQ will then go to the general fund and only be appropriated, the last sentence, page 6 and 7, or line 6 and 7, upon further action of the legislature. Okay, so that's been pretty standard language. Now, the next section 3, capital construction, this would, again, normally be in the budget bill. This exact language of section 3, and then you flip over, talks about the monies appropriated, to page 6, and you actually see the list. And these lists have appeared in budget bills in the past. Now they appear in the state-funded capital construction bill, budget bill. Okay, members, so these are not listed by priority. They are listed by agency number. Okay, and so that's why the forestry Level 3 building project is first, Office of State Lands and Investments. Next is on line 11, State Facility in Casper. That's got a footnote talking about the option. There were a couple options presented by A&I. One was a parking garage option, was more expensive. The committee selected option 2, was surface parking. Line 12 is $7 million for the State Facility in Casper. It's got another footnote, which is footnote 5 on page 7. And this is an effective immediately for land purchases. The State Building Commission has already have options on property where this building's going to go that will, I think those options come due in March. Okay, so that's that. The next, on line 13 and 14 are two community college projects. You can see that the first column is general fund, $5.25 million and $6.5 million, and then they are matched by a like amount of other funds from the community colleges. Line 15, 16, and 17 are also community college projects. You can see there are no general funds there. They are all other funds. Lines 18, 19, and 20 our state park projects. You can see the funding for those are some federal funds, and then the SR funds are special revenue. Line 18 are health and safety items. That's referenced in footnote 3. You can see that this is standard language we've used, that it's not for the construction of new facilities, but the rehabilitation of existing. These health safety issues would be like restrooms, maybe, I'm not sure about trail maintenance, probably trail maintenance, parking lots, those kind of things. That special revenue are entrance fees to the park. Line 19, the territorial prison, again, special revenue. And line 20, state parks water facilities. This special revenue comes from the percent diversion of the gasoline tax for motorboat facilities. And so these will go to boat docks, and this is routine kind of maintenance around the state. Next on line 21 and 22 are health facilities. This is $70 million total appropriation in this, but we break it up into two groups because we don't need the full $70 million. There's other projects that could get going as these, and these are these federal funds. That's what all this is, are those federal funds where you see general funds that we have sent to the highway department for minerally impacted roads. That will free up a like amount of general funds. Okay, so these are all funded by this one-time receipt of federal funds that we have put in the AML bill for minerally impacted roads, again, will free up a like amount of highway funds. And that process is a build the project, get receipt, and repayment from the federal government. So there's a little bit of time involved. That amount is $162 million. You saw the bill this morning we passed on third reading on those prior balance funds. It's estimated it'll take a little over a year to receive all those funds. So it's going to be an ongoing kind of cash flow process. So wherever you see general funds, those are those amounts, okay? And then finally, on line 24, members, and actually line 23 I want to talk about first. Both of these are corrections, and you can see the T5 on the other funds. That is the state penitentiary land fund. That grows at about $900,000 maybe a year off leases of penitentiary state lands. The $13.5 million is the build-out of the pods in Torrington. You might recall when we built the medium security prison in Torrington, it was pretty well done project, and there was enough money savings to actually build out the shells for future construction. So the shell is already there. Now this is the finish and the build out really of those shells. So all the infrastructure's there, the roof, the walls, all those things, the plumbing. It's now the finishing of that inside to add that capacity. Next on 24 is the Wyoming State Prison repairs, $7,750,000. Now that is in footnote 6 and 7, describes that a little more. And it puts some sideboards on this. And I tell you, this is about the physical plant at the state penitentiary in Carbon, the land of Carbon, and it's also about some sinking and subsidence issues with a wall, one of the main support walls. It's referenced to us, this is not imminent, but it's one of those things that so this isn't a thing we want to just appropriate $7.5 million for, $7.75 million for. We want to make sure, and you can see the language in here, that we put Senate File 91, which is that state penal system review group, to study this and work on this issue. So we're going to be the deciders. Five members of this body will be on that. That bill will come up again today on general file. If not, this will just, you know, it would go to State Building Commission, and they would hire an architect, and they'd come back and give them a number. And we'd be asked to appropriate. And so that's what we're trying to do, is mimic the process that we've used on the state facilities in Evanston, in the southwest and the center of the state. Okay, so that's those are all appropriated projects then. You can see that in general fund at $108 million right there total. Okay, if you'd flip over to page 8,
They're at the top of page 8, lines 1 through 10 are more conditions on the penitentiary repair. Line 13 starts appropriations for the University of Wyoming projects. You can see the University Science Initiative on line 1 is $51 million. The engineering building, 11.5. There's really, and if you go down to line 25, there's two pieces to that. The 11.5 and the $3 million, about 14.5. And this goes back to that matching provision, and we'll talk about it later in the bill. Some of this money's already appropriated, but we're going to take the match off of that. There are some footnotes that, you know, it goes into the, on line 21, Science Initiative, deposit into that account that we talked about on page 2. Engineering building, line 23 is West Campus Energy Plant. This is a level 2 and 3. The current energy plant is about 45 years old, and it burns coal. Some years it's burned Wyoming coal. Some years they couldn't get the type of coal that needs to be burned, and it had to bring coal from a state south of us. So it's one of those deals. It's and then as the campus, the new engineering building, that's part of that whole study of that. And next are property purchases. I think those are along a street that I think you – I probably can't say the name. That's been an ongoing project for this engineering building. And then finally on line 26, the WAMI Level 2. And you'll recall that our medical education program – is changing, and the students are going to spend one less year in the Seattle campus and one more year on the Laramie campus. And this is to figure out where you're going to teach these first and second year medical kids and how that's going to be done and how that's going to work. So, okay, and then if you go to page 9, this outlines the priorities. And it talks about basically if you looked on line 4, that should only be released for the purpose of expenditure when a like amount of unappropriated, unobligated, unrestricted federal funds have been received. And so we reference that. Now, as you, if you go down to line 13, these are the priorities that are listed in this bill. So they, it's all about the timing and when the money will be needed. So this is how we've organized these in this. And so you'll see them kind of as they're stacked up here on line 14. $11.5 million for the engineering building, $1 million for the West Campus Energy Plant. On line 20 is $45 million for the state health facilities. That's 45 of the 70. And then we have another 35 saved. Okay, flipping over to page 10, forestry project. Line 5 is the first $13 million on the Casper office building. Paragraph F and G on lines 8 and 11 are the two community college projects. And then next there's the $25 million for Department of Health. So you just think why they're in this priority is because they're going to come at different times as those funds are transferred from the highway department. And so it all, won't all be at once. It'll probably be over a year and a quarter, year and a half. Line 17, the $51 million for the UW Science Initiative, and then the $3 million for property purchases on line 20. And then finally, the WAMI study is the final priority. There's a couple little provisions on a few of these projects now as we go into paragraph Romanet 2 on line 4. Paragraph A is really, this is really the only general fund money, I mean, that is sitting here right now in any of these projects. At $1.4 million for, and that's basically the amount that was over the $162 million in the previous bill today. And so $1.4 million for the forestry project, that'll add up to the total. Then if you, the $3 million for the energy, or this next two, B and C, go together. These are
basically these are effective immediately, as A, B, and C. And B and C, that total is $10 million. Those are reversions of general funds for a natural gas refueling station that we approved for $1 million, probably 4 years ago, when the price of natural gas was competitive as a transportation fuel with gasoline. And that was never utilized. And then also a value-added project for $9 million. So that total of $10 million are general funds that they were AML dollars that were appropriated to the highway department and then were returned with a like amount of general funds. And so that's what those are. And that was the value-added project for $7 million. There was a time when we thought the price differential on turning natural gas into gasoline and diesel, the private investor built a prototype, did all those things. The state never really pulled the trigger on this and did and invested in this, and so that is the full amount. There was no expenditure of any state funds on that. Okay, and then Romanet 3 on line 19 is kind of the catch-all. If there's anything else, if there's any federal funds that arrive, they'll be deposited in the general fund, if not otherwise provided by law. Turning over to page 12, you could take lines 1 through 15 and just draw a line through them. That was a Senate Committee of the Whole amendment that your committee number 2 deleted. This basically was a Senate member who wanted, I think, or who made amendments to the task force's work and really kind of, threw a roadblock up to the task force and we deleted that and put a bunch of extra things that that weren't, that the task force, we're going to honor the work of the task force, I guess, is what I'll say. Next on section 4, the Department of the Health Facilities Task Force. This takes up a big portion of the bill. This is the reauthorization of this task force to continue for one more year. Okay? And that goes on, section 4 is on page 13. Page 14, page 15, and to the top of page 16. Okay, and then this refers to, on paragraph J, this refers to the amount of money that's effective immediately for those property purchases and some level 3 design that we talked about 2 pages ago. Okay, next is line 12, section 5. This is the exact same language that's been in the last couple budgets. And a carryover then from the budget bill, the damages to the state's biosafety lab. Still an ongoing fix on that. It allows some borrowing from the state risk pool. Your committee number 2 inserted in our standing committee amendment that these would only be, this, any of this would only, any loan from the risk, the safety pool, the risk pool would be, have to be approved by the governor. Next, Mr. Chairman, on page 17. This is another item that was in the budget bill we carried over into this. That is, there's an effort at the state honor farm in the middle of the state, the town with that has a river in its name, and there is an institution just outside of that town, and they have, going way back decades and decades, have quite a bit of land that was used at one time for agricultural purposes, to train some of the inmates, those kind of things. It's about 300 acres. Much of it borders a highway. The local town there would like to annex that for growth. Now, your committee worked this over. We worked it over the last 2 years that this has been in the budget. You'll see in the standing committee amendment, it was appraised at an agricultural value. We put in there that this is appraised at its highest and best use or commercial value, and that we wouldn't take anything less than 90% of that commercial value. And so it basically changes the 302 acres from a price per acre to a price per square foot. And we want to make sure that if we're going to dispose of these state lands, that we get the highest and best price for those. So that's in the standing committee amendment. And that is inserted on line 19 right after, at the end of the line, right after Fremont County. You'll see that in the standing committee amendment. Okay, next, members, on page 18, these are conditional appropriations from the SIPA account. And you'll recall that your appropriations committee saved the SIPA account in the original proposal that came to this body. The SIPA account was basically all swept in to pay back the $464 million that was taken out of the LSRA to fund the initial proposals of the budget. We felt, and as we passed that Senate file last year, it's important that we continue this growth in the LSRA with the 1.25% and the growth of the SIPA, because there's always going to be these projects. We know that in the next 5-6 years, the penitentiary issue is going to be here. And so we've got this strategic investment projects account, basically a funding flow for that. So this on page 18 and page 19 then is the 2017 SIPA. Of course, these would require further appropriation. Your standing committee amendment reshuffles these priorities. It moves the Capitol building from the first priority down after the state facilities in Casper. So it moves it from number one down to number five. We inserted another priority. There was a standing committee amendment on a 3-to-1 match for a library that here in community college in this town, $2.5 million to be matched by $5 million local funds. This was an issue we saw in our priorities that came from community colleges. Frankly, it was one of the highest rated priorities, and we've gotten more information from that they'd like to do a 2-to-1 instead of a 1-to-1 match with that. And then so all those priorities are moved down. Okay, these are fully funded, because they are guaranteed, and it'll be later in the bill, they're guaranteed out of the 1% statutory severance account, and the following projects are guaranteed. It is just the state facilities, which would be in the southwest part of the state and the center of the state, that $20 million, the $24 million at the University of Wyoming Science Initiative, and the $12 million for the state facility in Casper. And I think also the $2.5 million on this library here at LCCC. So that total guarantee out of that amount is $58.5 million. Okay, next, flipping over to page 20, is the exact same language with one less priority, and that is the 2018 SIPA. And we designed these really about the cash flow issues. Some of these are coming sooner than others. And so that's why some are fully funded in the general fund portion, and then some can wait a couple of years, and we'll just build those accounts like we've done on these other projects over the years. The standing committee amendment moves the capital payment down to the bottom and then moves the rest of these just up a notch. And so the state facilities construction account is the first priority, the University Science Initiative, and the state facility in Casper. So those three projects are also guaranteed by the 2018 1% severance, if that is needed. So these projects are fully funded. It'll just determine what bucket will tip if it needs to. Okay, next on page 22, section 9, this is the part about the interfund loan, the guarantee from the 1% severance. We had a lot of talk about the 1% severance. There were some people on the committee that wanted to put that in, and there's some members of the legislature. There were bills brought and on both ends of this building to put that 1% right in the school foundation fund or put it towards school capital construction. Others, there was a bill filed to put it in the general fund. And there were, in fact, we had motions on the budget then to do kind of a guarantee of 5% back. So there's been a lot of talk about this. Your committee thought that we want to set this out, and we, following this amendment or this memo from the LSO, talked specifically about this 1% statutory flow, and that if we did interrupt that, we want to have it for a specific purpose, and we have done that in this bill. Okay, and so that talks about this interfund loan, and that's what that refers to. Next, on page 23, section 10, that is standard language that's been in several budgets, probably the last 8 years, that any reversions from projects, so if we have a state-funded project out there, any of these projects, say we save $1 million or $2, we put that in the capital rehabilitation restoration account to reduce the cost of that. And that's been our policy for about the last 8 years. Okay, flipping over to Section 11. This refers to a 2004 general fund appropriation to the state penitentiary for demolition of the North facility. And that appropriation is on line 4. It's never been used. It's on line 4, or this component is still remaining, 2.173, and then on line 8, the $150,000. That's the amount that this Section 11 addresses. And you can see what it does on line 13. The first $929,000 goes for flooring in three facilities. There's some flooring issues and cracking, and they'll go in and do this spray kind of concrete flooring, and that's on line 15 at the Honor Conservation, Wyoming Women's Center, and line 16, Wyoming Medium Correctional Institution. Next, the $990,000 on line 17 is really for this demolition of this North facility. And what we've learned now in studying all this, and I know we've had representatives who've been very interested in this, they've gotten permission to bury or dispose of the rubble, the concrete rubble on site. But there's a lot of steel and a lot of things that can be recycled out of this building. So by waiting, probably we've saved money since 2004, I think. And this 990 is to really go in and get the steel and those things that can't be buried on site. And then finally, on line 21, $403,000 of that 2004 appropriation will revert to the budget reserve account. Okay, on page 25, section 12, there's two parts that had to be pulled into this, and it's the elimination of the matching of the $15 million match on the engineering building. What we've found on this is that donors really want to donate to the programs in the engineering and donate for research or endowed professors and those kind of things. I think only 4 of the 15 was ever realized in a match. And so this, you can see the strikeouts on line 16 through 20. And then also on page 26, we had to pull in two sections of this from previous session law. And on line 13 through 17, eliminating those matching provisions. Okay, and then finally on bottom of page 26, this $225,000, that was the amount originally appropriated to the task force. They only spent about 20 or 25, I think, and so that's going to revert. And then we've only appropriated $40,000 now going forward. And so, you know, I think that the time of that large appropriation, we're thinking there are going to be a lot of experts and a lot of architects and engineers, and I think they were able to task force considerable savings on that. Okay, and then next on page 27, section 13 is a Senate add-on to the bill. They've added all this language in the engrossed copy, and this is the mineral impact road account. And the first thing they've done, you'll see on line 23, is they've added a number, $24.2 million, for this minerally impacted road. This goes back in on line 18 and 19, last year's budget bill, 2016, or Wyoming session laws, 2016. You can see the first priority is $37.5 million. That's a capital payment. This is tranche 3. So the Senate put in a new priority 2. Because you remember the old priority 2 was passing lanes, I think, for $5 million. They've inserted a new priority two and then just moved everything else down. So the Senate wants to feel adamant and had the majority to get this minerally impacted road account and to get some funds flowing to the land of coal to move this Park County Road that will be state highway and close off part of the state highway that runs north of town there. Now, if you flip over to page 28, there's a few moving parts in this Senate amendment. Now, the second part starts on line 3 at the new sentence after section 346. It says, to the extent that it's not deposited in that from that tranche 3, monies from the highway fund will go to this. And that carries on through line 9, through the period. Then it starts on line 9 through 15, the Department of Transportation will submit an exception request in the 1920 for any amounts that were not realized. In addition, you saw the bottom priority was this road account in the 17-18 SIPA because your Appropriations Committee did not spend all of the SIPA. We left, I don't know, $8 million in 17 and $10 million in 18, so we didn't spend all that. And this would then go to the bottom of that. So really there's really five ways that this account works, as I see as the Senate did. First is to set up a new priority two in tranche three. Secondly is to go to the highway department for an appropriation. And then third, have the highway department ask for a supplemental appropriation in 1920. And then finally, in the 17 and 18 SIPA, if there's any amounts left over there. Okay, and then, and really this is the next language on paragraph B. As I see that, is part of how this works with the local governments in that county. And then if you go to page 29, line 9 and line 13, and we do this with our projects that we spend the local funds first, the general funds last, and if there's any left over, those are general fund reversions. And then finally, it's effective July 1st, 2016, but if you flip over to page 30, there are a couple effective immediately's. And the task force on line 7, that's what that refers to, section 4 of this act, that's the $40,000. Also effective immediately on line 9 is a reversion of that $220,000 for that task force. And then on Romanet 3 and 4, lines 11 and 14, that is $3 million on line 12 and $7 million on line 15, and that is a natural gas fueling station and the value-added project of gas to gasoline, that those revert, those are effective immediately. And finally, Mr. Chairman and members, on line 17, the appropriation for the build-out at the Torrington Penitentiary, the $13.5 million of state penitentiary funds is an effective immediately on line 17. Now, members, if you would grab your standing committee amendment, Mr. Chairman, and I think we can pull this together and then maybe vote on the standing committee amendment, and then have more discussion on this, but okay, so if you have the standing committee amendment, it's a two-page amendment, and these always look complicated, but the first one on line 5 deletes that Senate amendment with the language that I told you to just draw a line through on page 12 that we thought interfered with the work that this body's done through the task force. Line 7 is that only upon the approval of the governor, that was for if there's any loan out of the risk pool. Line 10, that refers to the Honor Farm sale of that property, that 90% of the appraised value, the highest and best use. Line 16 through 29 are the movement of those priorities, where we move the capital, that's where you delete entirely, and then move it down and reinsert it. As a new priority. And so that is the movement of all those priorities. And then on line 22 is the insertion of this priority 2, this Ludden Library, $2.5 million. And then, so that's at those priorities in the 17 SIPA. And then if you look on probably line 30 on down is the 18 SIPA. And it does basically the exact same thing. We move the Capitol building to the lowest priority, actually just above the minerally impacted road, and then move the other priorities up. So that's why you see the delete 2, insert 1, delete 3, insert 2. They just all move up. And then finally, on second page of the Standing Committee Amendment, this specifies exactly what's guaranteed through the interfund loan and the 1% statutory monies, is that we only are going to guarantee the state facilities in the southwest corner and the middle of the state, the state office building in Casper, the science initiative, and that 2.5 for the Ludden Library. So I think it's $56 million is the number in 2017, and it seems like it's $54 million. I'm just working off memory, but I think that's real close in 18. And that's probably about just a little over half of what those yearly totals of that 1% are. And that's if none of that SIPA is realized and the spending policy amount. So, and there is a Committee of the Whole Amendment, which is a technical correction, which was brought to me by the attorneys. Again, those are technical corrections, but I think the meat of all the interest, probably, members, is on this bill and on the Standing Committee. So I guess I'm asking, do we want to discuss them both before we vote on them both, or do we want to move the Standing Committee Amendment and then work? Okay, so I'd call for the question on Standing Committee Amendment.
We're on Standing Committee Amendment number 1. Do we have any discussion on this amendment? I see, first of all, in the back, Representative, it was Baker. We'll start with Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and the good chairman probably mentioned this, but on line 32 through 34 of the Standing Committee Amendment, could you re-explain that to me again, please?
I would, Mr. Chairman. And this is standard language that anytime we appropriate these matches with the colleges, and they have some of their own funds, whether it's a 2-to-1 match or a 50-50 match, I'll just tell you, 8 years ago, there used to be spend the general funds first, and if there was any savings, it was in the local funds. The last 4 years or so, we've reversed that and said spend local funds first, and do not use any of the general funds for administration, and you spend those last, and if they're reversions, they're general funds. That's what that refers to.
Representative Summers.
Follow-up, Mr. Chairman. So, you know, and I guess this is kind of both in the Standing Committee and the main bill, but so on the engineering building where UW actually did, they were able to generate some donations, like $4 million, I believe you said, or something like that. Does that mean that match has to be spent first before the other dollars can be spent? And how did that money that was fundraised flow into this?
Chairman Harshman.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if I know the exact answer to that question, but I believe the $4 million would be in the engineering account. I mean, I think that's held there when this whole project gets released. And so it looks like there's only $4 million then in the private funds out of that project. So I don't know the exact answer to your question. I probably have to get that and get it to you.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering if this amendment that we just got is a pretty hard-to-read thing. I handed everybody this so I can hold it up, and the chair would look at this one. Mr. Chair? You don't need to, I would just like to ask the chairman if he could get us this handout like this. I got this from our LSO folks, and what it shows is what we're spending, where we're spending it on, and I think this is a pretty clear picture. What I would, it was handed out kind of early this morning when they started the paper flurry. There's a two-pager front and the back. It has the projects that are there. And I will be talking to this in when we get off this amendment on the bill, so keep it handy. My question is, on the first page, Mr. Chairman, could we, with this amendment, generate a page like this that would show where you're flipping things, where things are going? This one has priorities on it, and this one's pretty clear. And I just want to make sure your amendment kind of helps us flow like this page. Is that possible, to get a page like this so we can see where the money, you said you flipped this around and this around, and everybody has this one, Mr. Chair, or Mr. Whip. So is that a possibility to make it fit into something like this that would be easy to read so we can make sense of what you are doing in this amendment? Is that a possible thing to do, Mr. Chair?
Chairman Harshman. Thank you, Mr. I'm sure before second reading we can get a list. I think this is basically the list. The only thing I see on here that is not listed is the Standing Committee Amendment from Appropriations on the Ludden Library for $2.5 million. I don't see that on there unless anybody else sees it. But I think it looks like it's prepared by LSO Fiscal.
Yes.
A couple days ago. So I think the only thing's changed is that $2.5 million. So we could get another one to add that $2.5 million if you like for second reading.
Follow up?
Representative Yagi.
Thank you. So this is pretty accurate. What does your amendment do in relation to this? What does the two-page amendment do in relation to this?
Chairman Harshman.
Mr. Chairman, doesn't do anything, actually. Doesn't change any of that.
Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question on page 1 of the Standing Committee Amendment, lines 10 through 14. This has been an issue going on quite some time in this community. There's some business council money that's been granted. There's a number of appraisals that have already occurred. I know the local group has spent, I think, on the order of $40,000 or $50,000 or $60,000 on appraisals already. Is this asking for yet another appraisal? Because this may just kill the whole thing if we leave this in the bill. So maybe just some more comments on that and go from there.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the amendment was really, the genesis was because we heard, frankly, conflicting testimony. And we heard that it was appraised at agricultural value, which is considerably less than commercial value. I mean, the intent to sell it is not to farm it. It's highway frontage. I mean, you know better than anybody here. But then we also heard, well, no, it will go and be bid out at this commercial rate. And so we were, frankly, a little confused. And I'd turn that over to the representative. He's actually made the amendment, if I could. He's waving at me. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
So,
representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. After we made this amendment, because we had conflicting testimony on it, and so then I then spoke with the head of the state lands, and the current appraisal is the highest and best use, so it's really, we don't really need it there. There will be no new appraisal. In fact, I read the appraisal last night, and And so I think that at this point, now that we know and have looked at the appraisal, it's kind of super flushes and nothing's going to change. So.
Representative Larson.
I'm good.
Okay. Representative Chairman Miller.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I think I'd like to divide the amendment, and the first portion would be lines 10 through 15 on page 1. Call that Division 1.
And the remainder would be Division 2. Is that right?
Yeah, let's talk about 1 right now.
And Mr. To the bringer of the amendment, I think we would support that. In fact, we don't want to get 90% of the appraisal. We want 100% of the appraisal.
Yeah. Yeah.
That looks divisible to me. Would you like to proceed with Division 1 or 2?
On Division 1, and just ask you to vote no on this part. You know, this has been going on a number of years, and I think this throws just a little bit of question in there. Of course, we want the most value for the land. The most value for this particular land is going to happen if it is ever sold, because the economics in this area have changed dramatically since this process started. But the real value of this doesn't increase until the subdivisions and things like that are created, making this more of something other than ag value. So on and against Division 1, ask you to vote no.
Further discussion on Division number 1, Speaker.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't understand. The final sales price is supposed to be not less than 90% of the highest and best use. The property should be appraised for the highest and best use, and it should take into account the subdivision value. That's what a buyer is going to pay for it. If a buyer is going to buy it on an ag value and then subdivide it, somebody other than the state's going to make the big bucks on the property, and I don't understand why we would want to allow that to happen. Somebody's going to have to explain that to me. We always do these things. I'm trying to think of what else we did, but we have specifically put in statute that it has to be the highest and best use, because that's what a willing buyer not compelled to buy is going to pay to a willing seller not compelled to sell.
Further discussion on Division number 1, Chairman Harshman. Okay, Chairman Miller.
Just further clarification for those that aren't familiar with the process. As this is going to auction, it's going to get the minimum bid will be the appraised value through the business council grant or a loan that they've made, and it's open to everyone to bid on this land. So they're going to hopefully get a much higher price than the minimum guaranteed by the local economic development group. That was the idea. So, vote no.
Further discussion on Division 1 to Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill, or Senate File Number 41. Further discussion. Question being called. All those in favor of Division Number 1, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no.
No.
The noes have it. Division being called. All those in favor, please stand.
Twenty-seven.
Would the noes please stand?
Edwin Jordan.
Division number one has failed. We are back on the remainder of the bill, division number two. Further discussion on division two. Seeing no further discussion and the call for the question, all those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment number one to Senate File number 41, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The ayes have it. We are now on Committee of the Whole Amendment number one. Chairman Harshman.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move Committee of the Whole Amendment number one to Senate File 41. Members, this is a technical correction. First line was a mistake. It's corrected. And then they, lines 6 and 9 had to put if enacted was left out of that. And so the rest of it's just renumbering and technical corrections brought to me by the attorney. Call for the question.
Hearing a call for the question, all those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment number one, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. The amendment is adopted. We are now on Committee of the Whole Amendment number two. Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Friends, in your box, you have a graph that says on top, SF-41, the fund flows of major projects, and my name is at the bottom of it. You know, as we talked about last week when we were kind of going over the budget, you know, it was mentioned that we have hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars that we'll be deciding this week outside of the general appropriations of government that we did last week. This is one of those bills. This bill has in it over $300 million. And so I thought it would be important if we spend a little time kind of understanding what these projects are and where the money is coming from as we think about it over the weekend and our second and third reading. And so this graph here kind of does kind of a broad stroke again of those projects, the accounts, and the flow of money. And then my Committee of the Whole Amendment just does one thing for us to think about. So, but I want to just spend a couple of minutes kind of going over again what these accounts are and where the money is coming from. So you'll see on the top that, you know, we talk about general funds all of the time, but the general funds we won't see on the goldenrod right now. Right, we won't see them at all because these funds come from AML, as the good chairman of appropriations talked about. You know, the official language is unrestricted federal funds. For us, this is the AML funds. Right? There is a 99.9% chance that those funds are coming in, but because we don't have the check in the bank right now, we don't profile them, and we talk about their being anticipated. But we are, as you saw with the last bill, as well as this bill, the expectation is that we are getting this money. So you will see, as we go down to three of the four boxes, which are the four major categories of expenditures in this bill, how much money on the top we will get from the general funds, which is the AML diversion funds. Okay, so $70 million for state health facilities, so that would be our state hospital as well as our kind of state DD center, all right, the UW Science Initiative that, broadly speaking, all right, the state facilities, new office building in Casper, as well as the Capitol. And let me just stop there for a second because you'll know that there are some other kind of state facilities that are talked about in the bill, but altogether they're minimal, and they're matching funds. We have lots of matching funds. So these are the four major projects. Okay. We fund all four of these projects over the biennium. Okay, they're fully funded. So how do we get there? The top line is the general funds with the AML diversion. The second and third lines for funding for each of those four boxes come from SIPA, the Strategic Investments Projects Account, all right, in 17 and 18. SIPA this year had $0 in it. All right, we have no money that's coming into SIPA for our fiscal year 16. but it's certainly expected that SIPA will fill in 17 and 18. Okay? So we expect to get $76 to $85 million in each of those SIPA accounts. And those SIPA accounts are used to fill up and pay for each of those four categories. Okay. But what we do in this bill as well, and the element of my Committee of the Whole amendment, is that we guarantee those SIPA amounts, right? That 1% statutory diversion that we set up in a Section 300 of the budget bill is worth almost $200 million, right? $197.7 million, okay? We are now taking that money, which is guaranteed. We're putting it in, and the good chairman calls it a neon coffee can, but it's a new coffee can, right, that we can't touch because of this bill, because we guarantee the SIPA amounts with this coffee can. So what this Committee of the Whole amendment does is say, hang on, all right? All those, you know, I'm not against any of those projects. All those projects are great. And, in fact, in this Committee of the Whole amendment allows them to keep on going, right? But if we end up that we do not have the money in SIPA, we are not guaranteeing it with that statutory diversion that we have taken with the Section 300. All right, that $197 million is available in a coffee can for the operations of state government. It is no longer a guarantee. Can we come back and pay for it next year? Absolutely, if we choose to. But it will be this body that makes that choice, whether or not to continue the funding of each of these projects that has its own account, right, in the auditor's office. All right, we're filling up these accounts until they're filled. Right? And then we will start building, all right, for the most part. And again, I'm at the 30,000-foot view here. So the one and only thing that this Committee of the Whole amendment does is it deletes, as the good chairman talked about, kind of the guarantee of SIPA for these projects. It leaves out there $197 million over the course of the biennium. And so with that, I'll take any questions.
We're on Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2. Do we have any further discussion? Speaker Pro Tem Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On an against amendment, and just to explain a couple of the other ramifications, the sponsor indicated that you do away with this guarantee and it leaves that money free to spend, and that's not the case because this the statutory reserve account is also out there to guarantee our the 1% diversion account is also guarantees our statutory reserve. So rather than what we've typically done, which is you set the 104 to 108 million, I think it's 104 this biennium, instead of setting that aside, what we did is guaranteed it out of that account and those monies that are set aside out of the 1%. So it is still serves as a guarantee. It's not just there free to spend, irrespective of what you do with this amendment, so the body should know that. But the second thing to recognize is the reason these were guaranteed was to allow us to contract and move forward on the projects. Because if we don't do that, we have to wait. You cannot contract until all the money is in hand, even though we may not spend it all until, you know, 2018, 2019, whatever the case may be. If you don't have it in hand, you can't contract for the monies. And so we sort of struggled with that throughout committee, saying, you know, some of these projects, and that would mean you're not even able to enter a contract on any of the work on them until July 1st, 2018. And on some of these projects, the timeline, that doesn't make any sense. But you get around that by guaranteeing it out of that statutory 1% account. Because the money's there, it's guaranteed to be there, then you can, even though we know the money's going to be in SIPA eventually, because we have that guarantee, that allows us to go ahead and contract, enter those contracts, and then the money will probably flow as it comes into SIPA, and so, you know, we won't have, hopefully, investments perform as we expect, and we won't have to dig into that statutory reserve account or the 1% diversion at all. But and I'm getting coached back here, but I'm going to let him talk to them. So I guess the other point is on that 1% diversion, if it doesn't get used in SIPA, if everything flows as we anticipate, then it goes into the permanent mineral trust fund, just as it always would have. And so, so you need to know those other pieces of the puzzle before you vote on it. But I think it's a good balance. I think it's a smart balance and a way to ensure that we move forward on these projects and we do so in a responsible way. So I'd urge a no vote on the amendment.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The more I look at this amendment, the more I like it. I think if this amendment would pass, wouldn't that remove the need to stop the diversion? It seems to me that this would be our last goodest possible way of preventing that statutory diversion from no longer going into the permanent fund. And I don't know if I'm exactly right there, but that's my question.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The handout that was handed out from the representative from Albany, the one we're looking at for this amendment. Again, I think the issue, and I think the good Speaker Pro Tem lined them out, but I just wanted you to write down a couple numbers beside that 1% severance tax so you know exactly what is happening in the SIPA. The first one would be 58. The second number right underneath it would be 56. And then the total would be 114. And so 58 is the projects we have guaranteed and 17 in this bill so we can contract and get them going. I mean, this is all about getting this done for people and people who are going to be building these projects. And because we have, and then 56 in fiscal year 18. So that total of 114 is the guarantee amount out of 197 million. And so, again, I can't tell you enough the timing to try to do a couple things. Number one, hang on to the permanent savings if we can, but just hold them out from tipping every quarter until the end of the biennium. That's the 1% severance. That was really our goal. If things get better and we don't need it, it'll flow into the permanent trust fund. If this gets worse, we might have to use it for operations, either on the school side or the general fund side. We don't know that yet, but we've got savings, I think, before that. Secondly, what we tried to do then is keep the spend rate on the LSRA down about the 6% a year. And so we got this balance going on. I mean, we could have said, hey, let's just fund all these projects out of the LSRA, and then your burn rate goes way up. Well, we think we're still counting on getting the SPA amount, the 5%. We've gotten that 12 out of the last 14 years. It's better average than not that we're going to realize that full 5%. If we do, none of these arrows even matter from the bottom up. From the 1% up, the 1% will still be sitting there. It'll be sitting here next year when a new legislature convenes, and the year after, you know, and the year after when this budget ends. And so you're going to have a couple looks at this before it either gets saved, or we put it into general operations, or if, you know, we don't reach our SPA for the third time in 15 years. So I'd urge you to. Your no vote on this amendment. I think we've been a lot of thought put into this just to time all this up. And really hours and hours and hours of work. Love to visit with members more about this. You got ideas to make it better. But I think just putting the screeching halt on these projects that we've kind of had in the queue, these state facilities have been like a six-year deal. We've been saving and getting going for these. And just like we've done other projects over time, can't fund them all at once, so we try to save and stage them out. And I think we've got an elegant way to stage these and have them all paid for in this budget. Bottom line, and use these one-time money for these one-time projects.
I've seen Minority Floor Leader thrown back there. Would you like for me to go to Mr. Representative Yagi?
If I could, Mr. Chairman, could I go first?
Yes, please.
Thank you. I just want to respond to some of these comments because I think we're not really understanding the issue. Okay, this account is going to sit there. And I'm rather appalled that we're using it to guarantee our statutory reserve amount. But that's sort of a separate issue. It's going to sit there. It's going to sit there in what's called the pooled agency account, which historically does not do as well as the permanent mineral trust fund. We have more than enough money to guarantee these projects in the existing income from the permanent mineral trust fund, which is sitting in another account. We could guarantee these projects with the LISRA just so we could get the contracts issued. We're not spending the money from the LISRA to do that. We could guarantee these accounts from the spending policy reserve account. But instead, we're diverting the statutory amount, which means it can't make money for us. So essentially, to do this entire scheme in big picture numbers, we're going to lose $10 million because that's how much money, roughly speaking, the permanent mineral trust fund would make on this $200 million during the biennium. And of course, that adds up over time because, you know, it would continue to make money in perpetuity. But instead, we have it sitting in an account for 2 years, invested at a lower rate of return to guarantee projects when we could guarantee them from another fund. It's confusing, but the simple message is this is the wrong way to guarantee those projects. It's bad money management. Thank you. So vote aye on the amendment.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as I look at this handout that was just given us, look at the state health facilities, the science initiative, some other facilities. I'm wondering, folks, if we were running a business like we're running this, when less money comes in, we kind of see what's coming in and we adjust our spending to the amount of money that's coming in. So my question is, we look at these things, do we have to have them right now? And do we have to take money out of the statutory one? Well, do we need to take the 1%? If we were running a business in Wyoming, this isn't the way we would do it. So there's my first thing. Do we really need these buildings right now? Some of them we're obligated to, and, you know, we're going to have to follow through. But my next question was kind of answered. I'm wondering, what is the rate of return of the money in the SIPA? We're having about $200 million in there versus in the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund, where it would be if it were not diverted. So two questions there. Well, one, just a thought. Are we needing to do what we're doing right now and taking money and putting it in the SIPA, and then the amount of revenue we would lose by doing that? Thank you.
Representative Klim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I do have a question, and hopefully the good bringer of the amendment can clear this up, and perhaps the good chair of appropriations can help me out too. I agree, members, with the good chair of appropriations in regards to I don't think we want to stick this money into the permanent mineral trust fund yet. If we fall on hard times, I think it's prudent upon us to be able to use those funds. At the same time, I really don't like the idea of guaranteeing these projects at the same time. It's kind of like speaking out of both sides of your mouth. We fall on hard times, we're going to guarantee these projects going forward, and we're still not going to be able to use those funds, at least to some extent. And so maybe you can clear that up for me, because I look at these little blocks here in our little chart, and I look at half of those big things, and it makes me ill. It really does, because just as the last speaker mentioned a moment ago, I find myself really questioning in hard times, do we need at least half these things on this list? Or if we do, should we be guaranteeing them? I agree there's a time and place for these things. I don't think that they're bad things by any means. I just really question if now is the time to be doing them. And if it is now, should we really be guaranteeing these projects with those monies? And so maybe one of the two speakers up front could help me out with that.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am the good representative from the land of coal. If you look at this chart, and I think on the box on the right, I think you could just cross out capital and because it's about this guarantee part, or you could leave it there actually and add more boxes, because you got the community college projects. I think there's three of those that are in there. In addition, you have another box would be the fire facility, fire truck facility with the forestry department. So that'd be another box there. So there's more projects than what you just see here. So you keep the capital, but it's moved down, and it's not part of this guarantee. Okay, and it's not really referenced there, but this guarantee only goes to state health facilities, the amount funded out of the SIPA, and then the UW Science Initiative and the state facilities, and then the one community college project that was added in the SIPA, okay, the Ludden Library. So that's what that is. I mean, and so just so you're clear on that, here's really what we're trying to do, and I think it goes to the speaker from the Southwest said, if we were running a business, would you do this? Would this be... And I tell you, several of our members said, number one, we want to hang on to our cash. We want to hang on to our cash as long as we can. And we've got $1.8 billion in cash in the pool. And so we're, you know, the budget that came to us was proposed to spend a third of that, quarter of it, third of it. And we're really taking a long view of this. So I think the number one business principle in these hard times is hang on to your cash. And we've tried to do that. I think the key thing, though, and there's a lot of things get said, and I'll just push back gently, my friend from Cheyenne, the good minority leader, but I think, again, it's whether we didn't want to guarantee this out of the reserve account, because the capital restoration is guaranteed out of that. That's where the loan comes from. And remember, we passed Senate File 46, which said we are now going to guarantee income out of the permanent mill trust fund. We're going to guarantee it, and you have to have that reserve account flow backwards to guarantee it. So I don't think that's an option. I don't think you want to leverage the guarantee there and mess with that whole fund setup that we have on our permanent trust fund. And, you know, the good minority leader's right. You could have guaranteed these out of the LSRA. We considered that. We talked about it. I think the thing is, though, at bottom line, it came down, we wanted to hang on to our cash. Now, going to the part about the return on investment. So let's say that you get the first $100 million in quarterly payments the first year, and it gets fully invested. It takes time to move that in. The returns for the agency pool and permanent invested funds has been very similar in the last year. Okay, so it's not like one has been getting 10% and the other's getting 1%. They've both been right hovering around that 3-4%. And you can see the treasurer's report when you get on his website. And so I don't think the idea that we lose, I think it was referenced $10 million in investment income, I don't think that's the number. And then secondly, I would say we've got a constitutional amendment that this fall that's going to allow agency funds by the State Loan Investment Board to be invested in a more permanent manner, because we've got a large amount now of state pools, pool fund with the LSRA. And so bottom line is we considered all those options, guaranteeing with the LSRA, guaranteeing with the reserve accounts. There were proposals for that. But so I don't think it was a scheme. I think it was a well-thought-out plan to hang on to our cash, to hope for the best that the SIPA, and, you know, it was referenced earlier, there's nothing in the 16 SIPA. The 16 SIPA was really, these were budget accounts. We didn't establish it in statute until we passed Senate File 46. So this budget is going to be the first time we have a statutory 17 and 18 fiscal year SIPA account with a dedicated revenue of 1.25% of the spending policy amount. And that's going to be about $83 million in 17, and it's going to be hopefully about $87 million in 18. So the reason there's no money in the 16 SIPA is because it's only been a budget account. We only put money into it the last few years when we've had excesses. Now we have a dedicated fund stream to that, to fund these. And so the thing I think, to go back to the member from the land of coal, trying to hang on to our cash and hope for the best, and we won't use any of that. And if we did have to, say we used all of it to guarantee it, you still got, you know, $90 million there. And, even if you did all of it, and even if you had to guarantee all of it. So it's not like we filled up all these projects and spent every dime. We tried to leave breathing room in all of these and, again, hang on to our cash, our LSRA, for this long-term view. We're trying to think about like a 10-year plan at this 6% spend rate, knowing that that amount, that burn rate goes up every year as the balance goes down, and then also thinking that we're probably, might be like the 1990s where we have to start funding schools out of the general fund side a little bit. And so we think that spend rate might only go up. And so we are very cautious in trying to move these projects and stage them in a way that was the best use of our resources. And I know, so we can argue that, but it wasn't like we just didn't spend any time on this and concocted a scheme that was going to cost the state $10 million in investment income. I just don't think that's right. And I'm really proud of our team for the way this was a group effort. And that's the way the committee system works in the legislature. It's group genius. I mean, no one person's got the right idea. And through working at 12 people and lots of testimony, and we came to a plan. And I think through the 60 of you, through group genius, we'll probably make it better. But I think to just scrap it and trash it and delay it, I think is not something I'm going to support. And I'd hope you would not support it as well. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you all. This is exactly the kind of robust conversation that I wanted us to have about this really, really important issue. And again, spending hundreds of millions of dollars of state money. I just want to jump in and with a couple of comments. First, understand that this amendment in no way, as one speaker said, puts a screeching halt to these projects. It just doesn't. All it does is it doesn't put the guarantee to the SIPA in 17 and 18. It's as simple as that. If the funds flow as expected, right, we've already said that the AML money is being used to start with, right? The next level is SIPA 17. The level after that is SIPA 18. All this Committee of the Whole amendment does is not guarantee the SIPA, right, with $197.7 million. Okay, that's what this does. It allows that money to stay out there. Or, as the good chairman of revenue suggested, you know what? Honestly, it's not the smartest thing to do, right, to have that money just sitting out there, not making the interest that it makes in the permanent Wyoming Mineral Trust Fund right now. So we did have conversations in appropriations about what to do with this money, right? There was kind of the understanding that there wasn't much appetite for going into LISRA, even though, honestly, we could use LISRA, all right? We could use LISRA. Instead, what we did is we captured, right, that statutory diversion for $197 million, right? We have another pot of cash. So there was discussion about cash, right? We're now just establishing another pot of cash, right? Right? We already have the cash out there. So again, what this amendment does is it stops the guarantee. That's it. Doesn't stop the projects.
Representative Escobel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think for the body to be able to make a better decision here, if you look at the treasurer's profiles of the investments, and a lot of it depends on the timing, too. So they're conservative estimates based on what the treasurer's report is showing, is that by not putting the money in the permanent mineral trust fund, that's $10 million in investment income. While the markets are down, that could be a difference of $10 million right there. It could be $20 million in investment income. We don't know, and it's based on those timelines. And I think that's important to remember, that this money is going to sit in the pooled income account, which is getting about 2 to 2.5%. So if you're talking about your own business, would you keep the money in your savings account, or would you put it in a trust fund to build a house that you're going to build 2 years down the road? That's another way I think the body needs to think about it.
Speaker Pro Tem Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to kind of focus in on the debate, this has nothing to do whether we have the 1% not in the PMTF or not. We've already made that decision. We had this debate on the budget. We agreed the 1% diversion is there. It's not going in the permanent mineral trust fund. So these discussions about rate of return are totally irrelevant to the decision that we have before us. What we have before us is whether you guarantee these projects out of that amount or you don't. Discussions about rates of return, whether we're going to divert the 1%, are completely irrelevant because we've made that decision. It's in the budget. It's law now, or will be, hopefully, when we agree with the conference committee.
Chairman Swanee, sir.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess the former speaker just said it. It's not quite law yet, and there's still some time, and I haven't voted yes on a concurrence to the budget yet. So there's a good reason we're having this discussion on this amendment and this bill before we have final action on the budget, and it is still timely. And just because I still think it is timely, looking back for the 3- and 5-year average and the 1-year average last year between the state agency pool and the PMTF, it's about 3 times higher. So over the 5-year, the state agency pool was 3.17%, the PMTF was 8.31%, the 3-year average is 1.92 to 7.85. So it's about a 3-time higher percent of return. What that equals to next year, I don't know. But in my personal, you know, life, cash is nice, but I just opened a savings account at 0.02%, and that's not going to do much for me over the next year. If I put it in my IRA, I might get 4%. It's going to do a little better for me. But I don't know if I have the numbers to, because I don't think we know the numbers over the next year, how much money we'll make or lose, and if the burn rate's higher than or less than the interest income on putting this in the PMTF. And so it's a policy decision of this body on which way we go, and we might be wrong and cost $1 million either way. But I think it's a good discussion to have, and it's still timely.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And one of the questions that's relevant to this discussion that's been voiced several times is, do we need to do these projects right now, and can't we just go ahead and shelve them and wait till we have the resources there to do it? And let me just share with you the work that's been done by the Facility Task Force. And the reason that task force was started is because we had kicked the can down the road, particularly on two facilities, the one that in Evanston and the one in Lander, whose physical assets, those buildings, are getting to the point that we really have some problems, and the population served there are vulnerable. We have down in the southeast or southwest corner of the state a facility that's on a fault line, and most of those historic buildings are just built on slab and masonry. And one of these days, we're going to, you know, the department oversees them had been coming back to this body on several occasions requesting funds to get those corrected and to no avail. And so we've kicked that can down the road. We're finally at the point now where we understand what the cost is to make those repairs. And at the same time we're making the repairs, we're trying to make some efficiencies. And we look at the Title 25 costs because we don't have the ability to house all those Title 25 people where they're supposed to be, which is in the southwest quarter of the corner of the state. And so we have the department that oversees that with a cost overrun of $12 million a year. The last 2 months alone have been $1 million per month to house the Title 25 patients outside of these state facilities. We've gone through the process of getting the Level 2 study of these facilities and understand that it's going to cost around $150 million. So if we stop that for every year that we postpone that, that cost will go up for construction about $1.5 million every year. And I think that's conservative, but that's what sticks in my head. So we've got these facilities doing two things. They're in disrepair. We need to get that corrected. And we're trying to become more efficiency and have cost savings on that end as well. And so do we need to move ahead and get them done? I would argue that without a doubt we do. And the evidence is there. And if we postpone that and kick the can down the road, it's going to cost us $1 million a month. Let's just call that interest for what we're paying to the Title 25 patients that we're losing. So I would argue that we need to move forward on these projects.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Man, on a Friday afternoon, this is a tough one to have. I just feel really bad we're in this position, but we've been put in this position, so here we are, and let's discuss this. The whole budget session, or the whole budget started, in the 1st of December. Recommendations were made. JEC looked at those recommendations and cut those recommendations. And now we're here to make some choices. We passed House Bill 1, and that told us we were going to do some things. A lot of repercussions came when that bill came that were putting projects over people. We made some good cuts, $40 million or whatever the good chair said, but here we're talking about spending way big money. So we have some serious decisions to make here, and I would suggest, are we making political decisions or are we making economic decisions? And I guess the good chair has said that, in his view, we're making economic. I'm wondering if it's a little bit political. I had a community college leader come to me and say because of the tough times we're in, they withdrew their college's request for another building. How many others are doing that? I don't see too many lined up to do that. We have an opportunity to go by priorities and to take care of our real needs, not our wants. We're going to have to go explain to our constituents the amount of money that we're spending when they're struggling financially. They're doing the cuts, and we seem to be just carrying on. If you look at the bottom right-hand corner of the handout I have, that's $331 million that we're spending on these buildings and this request. So if you look at that and you ask yourself, as we've been trying to say and this amendment is saying, where's the money going to come from for $331 million? And I just wonder, should we be spending this much at this time, or is it time to slow down our building around the state and see where our money's going to go, and that will allow us to not take the 1% out. That will allow us to keep a little bit of the savings we have. So I'm thinking, I'm looking at supporting this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I just go back to my good friend and colleague that sits in front of me that's just about to sit down. And and his comment on putting projects over people. And I would just like to remind this body of the citizens of our state that are living in those two facilities that the Facility Task Force is going to be addressing, and remind you that they are citizens of this state too, and I believe that they need and deserve our attention.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one quick thing, I think, so there's no confusion. I'll repeat what was said a couple speakers ago. The 1% severance tax account was created in House Bill 1. We all voted on that bill, and we'll concur on that. I mean, we are going to hold back the 1%. We know that. We've already done that in House Bill 1. We'll have the final vote on it next week. So this amendment doesn't keep the 1% and put it back in the Permanent Trust Fund. So, and then finally, this isn't like it's $200 million that all of a sudden, when we leave town, it's sitting in the account. This money accrues quarterly from severance tax payments. So you figure roughly $200 million over 2 years, it's about $25 million every quarter. So it continues to build. So it's not like it's a full $200 million just sitting right there. And then finally, I guess, I had a new chart out with you. It's actually more expansive. It has the other fund projects. But if you look in the first column, the general fund. Now, keep in mind, the only reason we're even having this bill, frankly, is because we had a one-time payment of our back taxes, which our companies in the state have paid, and it finally was released. We still don't have that. And that's written into this bill. None of these projects go until those unrestricted funds are received. So I don't know, what else would we do with one-time money? Are we going to take the one-time money and backfill the vacant positions we cut? I mean, we continued the pay raises we passed. We continued those. So what else would you propose to do with one-time money? Because if we don't do this now with one-time money, when will you do it? And I made this argument last week, but I thought, again, we would not even have this bill if those one-time monies wouldn't have happened. We wouldn't even be talking about any of this, and we'd be really wondering. But I tell you, if you're a person living in these facilities, you're a person that lays concrete foundations, wires buildings, those kind of things, these are important too. And so it's not about just the vacant positions we cut. It's also about this 4.8% seasonally adjusted unemployment rate and trying to keep people working, but also these generational investments. We aren't going to have to invest in these facilities for another 50, 60, 70 years. So on and against.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate those remarks that were just said a moment ago. I mean, it is one-time money that we're talking about. And I just want to be clear, and someone feel free, maybe the bringer of the amendment, correct me if I'm wrong, but what we're voting on really is whether or not to guarantee these projects. And if we don't guarantee these projects, which is to the tune of, what, $114 million is what we're talking about, we don't guarantee those projects, some of the ramifications that could take place. And one of those ramifications that we talked about is maybe these projects, or some of these projects, I don't know if it's all of them, may not start right now the way that some want them to. So that would be one ramification. Let's say, for instance, that worse comes to worse, and boy, we just get in bad financial shape, and we decided not to go ahead and guarantee, so we decided to adopt this amendment. And we have $114 million that's floating out there because it wasn't used to guarantee these projects. And I guess where I come from is we're saving this money, we're wanting this cash on hand to spend it as a guarantee on these projects. That's number one. The other side of things might say, well, we have $114 million and we can spend that on operations, which I think is foolish as well. If we get in dire straits, however, we might have to reprioritize projects. We might have to reprioritize things, and that one-time money of $114 million then comes in handy. But what we're doing right now is we're making a policy decision to say, you know what, we're going to go ahead and we're going to start these things right now. We're going to start digging up dirt. We're going to go ahead and I agree. I think that state health facilities is something we ought to get going on right now. I question some of these others. I really do. And I guess that's the policy question before you. Do you go ahead and do you fund these things and guarantee these things now and spend money, is what you're essentially doing, policy-wise, on this? Or do you say, no, we're not going to fund that, and if worst comes to worst, I guess we'll at least have $114 million and we can reprioritize things later and decide what we want to spend that one-time money on. So, thanks.
Making it officially one-fifth of the House that has spoken thus far, Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, glad I could provide that assistance. I got one question on these pots of facilities money. They are prioritized, so does each pot get filled up before it flows to the next pot? Okay. That's my question.
All right. Representative Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Folks, we're doing two different things here, and you just got to be careful with how this is, what these arguments are. The purpose of this amendment is to spend more money at the end of the day, not save it. And that's the key to your understanding of this amendment. This is to spend and have more money is available to spend and to appropriate. So on and against the amendment.
Representative Conley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, thank you for the really robust conversation. Just a little pushback on the last speaker. It's not to spend more money at all. It is simply to stop a guarantee. And so that this body is the body that makes the decision about how that 1% statutory diversion account should be used. Okay? It is as simple as that. Because it's being guaranteed the way it's set up now is that that money will be used to guarantee these projects. Please know that for let me just explain a little bit the difference between the good chairman's graph and the box. It's really just the other funds. So mine is a little bit simpler, and it's simpler simply because I didn't include the projects that are mostly funded with other funds. Okay? All right. Just to go back, what this amendment does is simply stop the guarantee. It doesn't stop the projects. To the good advocate for healthcare facilities, look and see. You'll see at the top of state health facilities, $70 million. It's expected that $70 million will be in that account within 2 to 3 months. All right, that money will be there. All right, 51.2 for UW and 20 million for state facilities in Casper. That's going to be in those accounts in 2 to 3 months. All right, those accounts are being filled up. These projects can go forward. All right, and on that, Mr. Chair, unless another quarter of the body would like to speak, I call for the question on the amendment.
Question having been called, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no.
No.
The noes have it. We are back on the bill. Any further discussion on the bill? Okay. Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a question on this. As we were going through the explanation of the bill, Section 11, something that caught my eye again, which catches my eye over and over as we go through these, on line, get my glasses out so I can see this correctly. On line 4, page 24, we talk about $2,173,500. That's been sitting out there since 2004. I find that troubling and interesting that that's been sitting out there since 2004. One of the questions is, has it been collecting any interest? And why has it been sitting out there since 2004? Since we're supposed to be sweeping all of these funds into accounts where we use the money.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question on Section 12. The language on page
25 and 26 that was crossed out about the matching funds. I just want to make sure I understand that correctly, because if I'm remembering, and I might be wrong, but if I'm remembering from when we had the discussions to originally appropriate this money, the conversation was that by requiring a match, we were going to double the state's money and make it more effective for them. And now I see that we're taking away the match requirement. So I guess my question is, where's the other half going to come from? Because I thought that the project, the state was going to pay half and the donations were going to pay half. So are we going to be on the hook for a lot bigger percentage now? Or if somebody could explain that to me, I'd appreciate it. Thanks.
Representative Burkhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to answer the question from the good representative from here in Cheyenne. On Section 11, that money was appropriated to demolish the old, what's called Old North facility at the Wyoming State Penitentiary. They've been trying to get that done ever since. They've had problems with getting someone to do the demolition, getting someone to haul the material off to a disposal facility that will accept it. The original idea was to bury it on site, and that hasn't happened mainly due to the fact that there are EPA requirements. It's considered toxic waste due to the amount of steel embedded in the concrete. Money was readjusted a few years later. It's been there. If you read the rest of the bill, that money is removed from that account. There's a little left in there. Hopefully they can still find someone, but to repair flooring at some of the other facilities and do some other things. This has been a long-term project that really has gotten not much progress since then. But it's still there. It's still something still needs to be done with it. And that's the story on that money.
Chairman Madden, I've seen you there for a while. Would you like to speak?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thought I should wait until after the preceding speaker got done. So I guess the thing I want to next talk about is that, the first thing you notice when you open up to page 2 on this bill, you end up with a whole bunch of new accounts being created. And that leads me to the question, how much of all this money on this page is being appropriated into accounts as opposed to being appropriated into a project? We've already talked about a couple of accounts that were created back in 2004. It turned out to be a coffee can, and now we don't need it in the coffee can. And there, I don't know how much of all this these appropriations will actually be spent in this next biennium. I look at all $404 million. I know it's not all going to be spent in this biennium, but if someone could help with that, I'd be grateful. The other thing I marked was the Health Facilities Task Force, and I went back to the session laws to try to see how it was changed. Substantially different composition as to who's on this committee, or at least the bodies that are on the committee. And is it going to be the same task force, or is it going to be some going to be thrown off and we're going to put a new one on, or what? I don't know why this is in an appropriations bill. I just don't understand what the real reason for it is, but maybe you can help me with that. We've already talked about that. Oh, and going back to the building roads at that section 13, 29.25%. I don't remember that being in any YDOT regulation, and if it is, I stand corrected. And, what road are we talking about here? I have a feeling there's some road that everybody's got in mind, but I don't know what road it is. And whether is it a likelihood that that road's going to be done, or and is it going to be done in this biennium? That's the kind of, you just, you look at this thing and it looks to me like it asks more questions than it answers, and I just can't get underneath what this is all about.
Representative Lindholm. I'm sorry, Larson. Ugh.
Thank you. I'm more out than up. Just one question or comment on page 16 when the good chairman was describing this bill on Section J, where we appropriate $9 million for the state facility on the Level 3 design study. He mentioned that that would also be for purchase of property, and I think that that was just a mix-up. We've got all the property. The $9 million is solely for the Level 3 design, and that's based on the estimate total cost. That's standard procedure and the way that they determine those design costs.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Speaker Pro Temp. I appreciate this bill, and I appreciate the process that we're going through this year, and it gives us an opportunity to look at this money. I'm looking at page 15, line 10 and 11, and I'm just wanting an explanation as to why this particular project and the task force isn't subject to the procurement provisions of the state. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 15, line 15, you know that the quick answer is, I don't know. That's been the standard budget language, and it refers to the task force. It doesn't refer to, like, a, you know, one of these big building projects. Those obviously, so I don't know if that's just simply so they can, if they need an expert or somebody, that they don't have to go through a 30-day thing. But I've asked the attorneys, frankly, to get me the answer. I don't know that. But it's not, that has nothing to do with any big project. It's just the task force. It's in the task force part on Section 4. The good chairman of revenue asked about these accounts. If you go to page 2 and 3, the biggest projects have accounts. We've had these in budget language for years. The small ones don't have accounts, like a community, you know, a $6 million community college or the $6 million for the forestry department. Those are smaller amounts. Those will be filled and go out pretty quickly, pretty standard, probably small projects. But these other bigger projects, some, what we've done in these big projects, you build an account and you just keep saving money and moving that until you're ready to do it. So it's, you have to have a place to put it. We've generally done it in House Bill 1. Well, this is the capital construction bill, so we do it in this account. So hope I answered that question. And then the amount of money spent in each one, I think you could do the math easier than I could. You could probably just get that sheet that I handed out to you and that the representative from the Southwest handed out, those amounts that are going to flow into those three accounts, and subtract it from the total. A question on the road. I think the question was, is there a specific road? Well, that's a good question, because when you go to this Senate amendment, and that was on page, might have to help me, page 27, it's written in such a way to not say the exact road, but to give guiding, and you can just read that as you read that account. So you can't come in and say this is for Highway 37 or Highway 132 or whatever. So you write it in such a way that it, you try to direct it that way without that. So it's to that mineral impacted road account. And So I think that's it. I mean, you got to read it for what it is, and I don't know, it's Senate language. Frankly, that's a Senate amendment. But we never put a specific road in there.
Any more discussion? The question being called on Senate File 41. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 41 has passed Committee of the Whole. Ladies and gentlemen, just a quick reminder, we've got about 38 bills to work through on general file, and we only have today and Monday to do it, which means just for your planning purposes, we're probably going to be here for a while tonight. So the next bill for our consideration is Senate File 32. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 32 from Education, an act relating to the Wyoming Education and Accountability Act, exempting alternative schools from school-level determinations required under the Wyoming Accountability and Education Act as specified, requiring assessment and refinement of alternative school accountability indicators, requiring a pilot of an alternative school accountability model as specified, requiring alternative school technical advisory group, continuing operation of the Select Committee on Statewide Education Accountability, requiring reports, appropriating funds, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman of Committee Number 4, Education, to whom was referred Senate File 32 engrossed alternative school accountability, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Freeman, Hunt, Yagi, Kinner, Northrup, Paxton, Peverine, and Summers and Thrones. Signed by Representative Northrup, Chairman. Further reviewed by your Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom referred Senate File 32 engrossed. Respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Connolly, Harshman, Moniz, Stebson, two no votes, Representative Greer and Nicholas, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman Northrup?
Thank you, Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 32 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 and ask for a favorable. Okay, so Standing Committee Number 1 is we just added after school or on, I'm sorry, I can't read it, a school to it because we want to include a school's performance plan also into it. So it's a quick and easy one. Ask for your favor and call for the question.
You've heard the question on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 32. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That Standing Committee Amendment has passed. I think we're now on Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to the Senate file. Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 and ask for your favorable support. Members, this is the haircut amendment and the elimination of the Select Committee on Accountability. We did that in a previous bill also that was referenced. I think the body that has not been upheld down the floor, I know. But it's also in this bill, so we removed it. Now, I would tell you that if you go to page 10, section 4, on line 15, we also removed this 6,500 from the State Board of Education. And then if you go to page 11, line 20, we moved 3,500 for this technical advisory group. I would tell you that those were more than a haircut. That was a scalp and then finished off with shaving cream and a razor. I think we went a haircut a little bit too far. And then thus a Committee of the Whole amendment follows this to restore that 6,500 and the 3,500. But I'd urge your adoption to remove the 70,000 and we'll correct it here in a few moments.
Any further discussion on the Standing Committee amendment?
Question.
Question being called on Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 32. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That Standing Committee Amendment has passed, and we are now on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. And I basically mentioned that brings back the $6,500 for the professional judgment panels. It's a crucial part that needs to still be funded, and the $3,500 also for the technical advisory. So I'd ask for your support.
And any further discussion on that amendment? The question before us is Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 32. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That Committee of the Whole Amendment has passed. We are back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For an explanation of the bill, the Vice Chairman of Education is more than willing.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I'm going to try to give you guys the short version. I can explain the entire bill to you in length, but after going through the last one, I'm not going to do that. So, members of the 63rd, I bring you Senate File 32, a committee bill out of the Select Accountability Committee. When the Accountability Act was instituted, it did not contemplate alternative schools. Alternative schools were created to educate students who have been left behind by traditional schools. These could be single-teen mothers or students who have been suspended and have fallen behind. These are kids who have often dropped out of school but have decided to try school one more time. When alternative schools are graded based upon the current school accountability model, they always, nearly always, end up at the bottom of the scale. After a couple of years of seeing the models spit these alternative schools to the bottom of the list, the advisory committee to the select committee the alternative school administrators, and even consultants agreed we need to revisit accountability measures for these schools. Based upon legislation from a year ago, the department in charge of education put together a technical advisory committee to review this issue, and this bill is the result of their efforts. And that was made up of educators in the alternative school field across the state of Wyoming. And so basically what this bill does is put into effect a pilot program. It'll allow the development of a pilot program for alternative schools. And it does, like the good chair said, it reauthorized the select committee. It authorizes LSO to do work with the advisory committee. And that's kind of what the bill does. So really all it does is authorize the development of a pilot system for creating an accountability system for alternative schools. And I'll leave it to the short version unless I start getting questions, and then I'll go to the long version.
Question being called. All those in, do we have any further discussion? Oh, Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to tell you the rest of the story behind this. There's no other state that I'm aware of that has gone and spent money on doing alternative schools, and you might ask, or doing accountability for alternative schools. And you might ask why. The report that this special committee came up with said that you got to be flexible in going from one school to the other and look at it in terms of what they're trying to do. You know, from one it might be climate. Another one might be attendance. We heard that in the committee. There's no deterministic common denominator from one alternative school to the other. The other thing is, we don't know how much it costs. I don't see any numbers of the amount of consulting fees that's already been paid, the amount that's going to be paid. We do know a little bit about how much it's going to cost to have this reinstate, this task force or whatever it's called, reinstated. And I think with what I see with the school foundation account, that we have a lot better ways to spend money than this paying some consultants to come in and tell us how to measure the accountability of us. You know, I don't know how many alternative schools we have. We probably have 20, 25 of them, I suppose, in the district or in the state. But they're all doing different things. You know, the regular schools, we have achievement levels, and we have testing, and we have all of this. But there's nothing like that contemplated in this alternative school accountability scheme. And I guess what I'd like to know before I vote on it is how much it's going to cost.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, you know, the good chair of revenue brings up a good point, and that, I guess that point is the continued work of consultants, which I think in the beginning of this will be required. But I think that's valid for the whole Accountability Act. I have never been a supporter of the Accountability Act. Having said that, it's in place in statute, and alternative schools and alternative school populations have a much different challenge to schools than do traditional schools. And so we do need to split them out if we intend, one, to figure out what system of supports an alternative school really needs. And I think it's just, I mean, if you just look at the results. And so just to give you an idea, what are some of the indicators that will be used in this system? So if you go to page 3 of this report, which I wasn't going to bring you into, but it says school level performance for alternative schools shall be determined by measurement of performance indicators and attainment of student performance. The indicators shall be measured in the following ways. Now, these are what they're going to be looking at. The exact way they'll get to this is part of this pilot project. One is academic performance shall be measured by academic achievement and growth. That's what we currently do. So we're going to look at achievement and growth. Two, college and career readiness shall include a measure of progress in earning credits towards graduation and an attainment indicator to measure the extent to which students graduate. So similar to what we do in the current system is we are going to look at graduation rates. And then student engagement shall be measured by attendance. And so I think we all know that one of the greatest challenges with this alternative school population, that's where they really fall behind, is attendance. So are we going to put them in a setting that helps improve that attendance, and are we going to be able to measure that? And then finally, let me go to part 4. That would be on page 4. And then it goes to school climate. And the good chair of revenue brought up school climate, which was much discussed, actually, and there are some concerns about how you would measure school climate. Having said that, it's kind of interesting that in the reauthorization for the great federal act of education, the new one that came out actually speaks to this and talks about school climate and that school climate should be looked at. And it turns out that Wyoming is ahead of the game because we're already looking at that. So it may be that we may need to apply that to the rest of it. Now, if we want to can all accountability, you know, my eye vote. But if we're going to keep it, then we need to treat populations of students equally. And that's what this is attempting to do. And schools equally. That's what it's really trying to do. So I urge you to support this. And if you want to pull the funding for consultants, have at it.
Representative Freeman. All right. Any further discussion? Yeah, hearing the call for the question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Northrup's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File Number 32 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
The ayes have it. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File Number 63.
Senate File 63 from the Management Audit, an act relating to economic development, amending requirements for setting interest rates on state investments in industrial development bonds, providing a sunset date as specified, amending terms for loans and loan guarantees made from the large project account within the revolving investment fund, authorizing expenditures of funds, providing applicability, repealing the inconsistent provision and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred Senate File 63 engrossed, Economic Development Programs-Revisions, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that a due pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Kirkbride, Lindholm, Paxton, and Dan Swanitzer. Those who voted no, Representative Edwards, Gay, and Jennings, signed by Representative Dan Swanitzer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Swanitzer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move in the committee of the whole rise report to do so with the recommendation that Senate File 63 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments, and I would turn it over to the good Chairman of the Management Audit Committee.
Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Short explanation. This is from your Wyoming Public Purpose Investments Report from August 7th of 2015. If you look in your inbox, the 200-page report is there. We'll go through it page by page.
Oh.
No? I've got a short version, too. The short version is this looks at the Industrial Development Bond Program and looks at the Large Economic Development Project Loan Program that this body put in place 2 years ago. And what it does is we're pretty much just doing away with the Industrial Development Bond Program by moving the sunset from July 1st, 2017 to July 1st of this year. So we're doing away with that program. These programs will be now run under the Large Economic Development Project Loan Program. The second major change is over on page 5 of the bill, item E under Romanet 2. In the large project funding program that we're doing away with, the Industrial Development Bond Program, it required, actually I think it was the other way around. In this program, in the Large Economic Development Program, we required a 3-to-1 match of funds. You bring in basically 75% of the money, and this program would fund 25% of the money, and the collateral for the 25% put up by the state would be the whole project. No one really utilized this program. So it's changing the other way around. The person or group that comes up that wants to use this program has to put up 25% of the money, and the state will put up 75% of the money. So that's what was in the Industrial Development Bond Program. We're just moving that part over into the Large Economic Development Program that we put in place 2 years ago. That's the simple version of the bill. It does those two major changes. And if you have any questions, please go to a mic.
We do have amendments. Speaker Brown.
Mr. Chairman, I move committee of the whole amendment number 1 and ask for your favorable consideration. This is an additional provision that would be in this bill that was, it was something the governor wanted, and frankly it got left out. Somehow I ended up as the odd man out with this amendment. So here goes. This is a $10 million appropriation from the LISRA to the contingent economic development account. It has a lot of constraints on what can be done with it. It can only be expended to promote and aid industry projects to the state, and it has all these limitations on it. First, the project has to be submitted to and reviewed by the governor, who can make preliminary recommendations. Then it has to be submitted to and reviewed by the state treasurer as to the structure of the funding. Then it has to go to the Business Council and be reviewed under 912-601 to 603. And when you look at 601, that has a whole list of requirements that the Business Council has to run it through to see if it fits their criteria. Finally, if it makes it through there, then it's submitted to the governor for final approval and the state treasurer for final approval, and then I thought the SLIB board was in here, too. Oh, and then there has to be a written opinion from the Attorney General certifying that the expenditure is legal. So it's an extra fund that the governor would like to have access to that has to run through all these requirements before it can be expended. It would give him some flexibility to fund major economic development projects, if any, appeared on the horizon that the state could participate in. So I ask your favorable consideration.
We're on Committee of the Whole, Amendment number 1. Do we have any discussion? Representative back there. Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the amendment, I have a question. I think it's clear, but I just want to make sure from line 39, this would be a grant program and not a loan program. Is that correct?
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for that question. That's one of the reasons that it has to go through the state treasurer as to the structure of the funding. It would give the governor flexibility to do a loan, do a grant, do a combination of those two, or maybe some other things, depending on the situation and depending on the project and what the state involvement ought to be in the judgment of the governor. He's the one who drives exactly how that's structured, but the state treasurer has to oversee the structure of that funding.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the sponsor of the amendment, it seems as if here a couple years ago I worked hard to help pass some legislation for large project funding under Amendment 4 to our Constitution. And granted, that's a loan program. I guess I'm questioning why this is needed with that mechanism already being in place.
Mr. Speaker.
Because we need it. Because it was requested. It was actually supposed to be in the bill, and somehow it was overlooked, is my understanding, and that's why it's here at the present. That's the best answer I have.
Eloquently
put. I see help coming to the podium, maybe.
Chairman Miller. Okay. All right. Representative Yagi.
When we started this large project funding, it was something like $25 million, and it was a 1%, which is just about a grand anyway. But now it's $10 million, and it is a grant or loan, according to this, what Speaker just said, but $10 million, why don't we, what is that the upper limit of $10 million? Or is $10 million more above the $25 million? Is that what I'm getting in this?
Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's my understanding this is an additional $10 million. The $25 million is still there in the program. And, you know, this came from folks way above my pay grade. So that's all I'm going to say on it.
Representative Yagi.
And thank you for follow up. The Business Council is the final, the governor's office final say, along with the treasurer. In the other bill, the treasurer had a lot to do with it, and I think he's still involved with this. Is the money, back on the bill, but this is the amendment, the 75% switching from the state clear up to 75%? That just does not make any sense to me, why we would economically invite somebody to come in and say, we'll pay three-quarters of the money for you to come in, and now we're talking $35 million. I'm not quite understanding all of this, so help me out. Thank you.
Chairman Miller.
Actually, that part's pretty straightforward. You know, if the group asking for the money has to put up 75%, to get 25%, but yet have to put up 100% of the collateral. Would you use that if you're a good business person? And that's the whole thing, is people weren't using it. So that's why we've gone to where a normal loan for a business is you put up some of the collateral or some of the money, and you go to the state of through these programs for the other 75%. And you're probably putting up the majority of the project as collateral. So this is the way a normal loan basis would work.
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Chairman, I wanted to be sure we got the slip board in there, because it is in there and I missed it. So look, this is a very narrow program. It, the project has to first be submitted to the governor. So the governor is the initial gatekeeper. That's on line 15. Must first be submitted and reviewed by the governor, and he's got to give preliminary recommendations on the size and parameters of the funding. Then, if it makes it through there, then it's submitted to the state treasurer, who provides preliminary recommendations on the structure of the funding. And that would depend on if it's a grant loan, a grant, all the combination. The state treasurer's got to pass on that structure. Then it goes to the business council and runs through the total filter of the business council and all their criteria. Then the business council's, now I'm at line 29, the business council's recommendations are forwarded to the State Loan and Investment Board for final approval. So at that point, it goes through the SLIB board. And then after that final approval from the SLIB board, then it goes back to the governor for final approval, following his determination that funding for the project has met the requirements of this section and the state treasurer's final approval on the structure of the funding. And then it goes finally to the Attorney General to pass with a written opinion on the legality of the expenditure. So it's very narrowly structured. It's a discretionary fund that's available for the governor if he finds the right kind of project. It would just give him the flexibility to deal with something that maybe couldn't be dealt with any other way.
We are on Committee of the Whole, Amendment number 1. Question having been called, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Any opposed, say no.
No.
The noes have it. The amendment has failed. We're back on the bill.
Okay, folks, I know everyone's getting a little tired and cranky here. On page 7 is just another smaller component of the changes here, top of page 7. Prior to this bill, the cost of any experts employed under this subsection to help the business council, because they're not experts in everything. Before this, it was borne by the business council. This bill makes it borne by the people asking for the money. So, again, please vote aye on this bill.
Representative Jennings.
Mr. Chairman, on page 5, and I was one of the no votes on this, we strike through the word private, and with Romanet 2 above that, am I reading that correctly, that say federal funds could be brought in, pay for the 25%, and then state funds could pay the 75%? We're getting rid of all. Could you just explain that a little better to me?
Page Chairman
5, lines, starting on line 6.
Chairman Miller.
It does strike private, and again, this is where the investment was three times. The person or group asking for the money was putting up three times the amount to get one, you know, basically putting up 75% for 25%. That language is struck in there. It does strike private, so I assume that the money could come from anywhere. You know, it could come from federal, or it could come from, you know, I don't know if it could even come from another different state fund.
Any further discussion? Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I need to understand, when I read the language, and let's just stick with the section we were just looking at, the previous question was on, page 5, 6 through 13. when I read this, I'm not getting 75, 25 from the 25 being the state. I'm getting that only 25, at least 25 has to be from the private source. That means that up to 75% could be from the state. The wording of this is just doesn't, it's flipped for some reason, and I'm not sure if it's clear. Thank you.
Chairman Miller.
Well, I'm looking for the 3-1 comments. That's down in section Romanet 3 on that same page. And it, and what we're going from is the 3-1 to basically 1-3. You know. But again, the section you were referring to, Mr. Chairman, the section you were referring to does say that the project initiator is putting up 25% of the total cost of the project. That's the change. It used to be 75%.
Representative Barlow.
So, Mr. Chairman, I think that both sections read the same, E 6 through 13, page 5, and 19, page 5 through the next page. They read the same, but what's operative in this is not provided by the state of Wyoming. So the state of Wyoming is putting up the 75, up to the 75%, and the investment or whoever else is putting in the other, the applicant, is only having 25%. So I guess I think we flipped this, the meaning of what is here. Thank you.
Chairman Zwanenser.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the previous speaker is correct. The current program now is a 3-1 match. We're moving it, no, it's a 1-3 match. We're moving it to a 3-1. And because nobody is taking advantage. This 3-1 is still, and this is just what I overheard in committee, they put up is still collateral, and it still is a positive benefit to the state and all their economic models. But nobody is taking advantage of the program that we've had on the books. And so this is a change to make it attract business and to start the process. All the money they put up, it comes back in other revenue sources, taxes, jobs, economics, et cetera, and they have these fund formulas and models that provide for that. But he is correct. The current required a 3-1 match, and we're going to a 1-3 for the state of Wyoming.
Any further discussion on the bill? Call for the. Are you ready for the question? Question. Okay. Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I just want a clarification on the job of the Management Audit Committee and whether this is like a technical cleanup or a complete policy shift, because typically bills that come out of Management Audit are not policy shifts but just cleanups. Can you elaborate on the job of that committee and how this pertains to that?
Okay,
Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Management Audit Committee studied this issue for probably over a year. They looked at this one program, the Industrial Development Bond Program, that hasn't been used. I can't remember when it was put in place, but it hasn't been used. So there you go. We're cleaning it up and getting rid of it. It sunsets. It was sunsetting in 2017. We've moved that up to this year in July of 2016. One aspect of that plan, that 1-3 to 3-1, is taken from that program and put into the program we voted on a couple of years ago, the Large Economic Development Project. We're not really changing things a whole heck of a lot. We're just getting rid of one that we didn't use and putting in one that we debated several years ago, and it's being used somewhat and has $25 million in there right now for use by the state. It would have had apparently 35, but you didn't like that at the amendment.
Is there any other discussion? Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Zwanenser's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate file number 63 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say no?
No.
Noes have it. Division having been called, all those in favor, please stand.
37.
A very weak eye. The eyes have it. Well, we have covered three bills in almost 3 hours. And so, like a herd of turtles, we head off to the next bill for our consideration, which is Senate File Number 9. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 9 from Transportation, an act relating to railroad quiet zones, providing for administration of the railroad quiet zone program as specified, specifying grant matching requirements, reapportioning funds, repealing existing law regarding railroad quiet zones, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman of Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom it is referred, Senate File 9, engrossed, respectfully reports saying back to the House for the recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Allen, Blake, Campbell, Kennedy, Eklund, Walters, Daves, Wanitzer, Representatives Laux and Reeder voted no, signed by Daves Wanitzer, Chairman, further reviewed by your Committee Number 2 Appropriations, to whom it referred Senate File 9 engrossed, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Stepson, 2 no votes, Representatives Burkhart and Nicholas, signed by Representative Moniz, Vice Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Zwanitzer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 9 do pass. There are no amendments, and for the explanation on the bill, we will turn it over to the fine gentleman in the far corner in the back.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I promise to keep this bill on the tracks and won't get derailed. I proudly bring you Senate File Number 9, I've been working on the railroad quiet zone bill. Those who remember and who were here in 2011, we set aside $5 million. And there is a handout here, HD 39, Senate File 9, has a list of cities that I can't say over the microphone. $5 million was set aside. There was $2.7 million left unobligated. Over on the other side, the Appropriations Committee, or the committee that handles the money, cut away $1.1 million. So what's left now is roughly $1.6 million that will be used by five remaining towns that can possibly use this money, with the caveat that it has to be, they have to get their bid in by January 1st, 2007. 2017, excuse me, or it will all revert back to the general fund. And if you look at the list of us, what we did actually was lower the matching grants to the smaller communities that are left. And there's only five communities left that may or may not apply for these funds for a quiet zone. It all depends on the federal agency that covers the rails and the department that covers transportation. And so I think it's a good idea to give these other communities a chance, and I'd ask for an aye vote.
Is there any discussion on the bill? Are you ready? Oh, Representative Laux.
Mr. Speaker, I'll rise in opposition to this bill. I mean, I'll make it simple because we need to get out of here and get through some of these bills, but these funds were appropriated in 2011. And they had all this time to ask for this money, and now until we drop the matching fund down to 3%, or excuse me, 2%, and it was 5% before, and from 25% to 13%, from 50% to 30 on the three tiers. I mean, we're like, okay, come on, please come and take this money. We need to put it back in the general fund. Thank you,
Representative Greer.
Folks, this bill is what you call a predicament. I don't like this bill. However, the appropriation, the money that was sitting there was $2.1 million, and the other body gave this a haircut and is reverting a portion of those funds if you pass this bill. Keep in mind that this bill stays in law until 2018. So here's your predicament. You lower the percentage, make it easier for the communities on the list to be able to use the 1.6, or you don't pass the bill, and that reversion of around $700,000 doesn't happen. So I just want to make you aware of that.
Any further discussion on the bill? Chairman Zwanisser.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just quickly, what we were looking at is some of the smaller communities, those communities that have 100 people or less, would have a really hard time coming up with a little, even the 5% match. We're looking at a $500,000 situation. And so we were trying to lower that so some of those smaller communities, one by the big lake up north here, about 100 miles and stuff, that would have an opportunity to take advantage. Thank you.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just urge an aye vote. Let's give these five communities a chance to look at this, see if they can afford it, and they possibly may not, and it will all could possibly all revert. So please vote aye on this. Thank you.
Any further discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Zwanisser's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File Number 9 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Chairman, being in doubt, all ayes, please stand. The ayes have it. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File Number 12. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File Number 12 from Transportation, an act relating to veterans, establishing the Vietnam War Commemoration Account. Establishing the Vietnam War Commemoration Matching Account, authorizing the Veterans Commission to contract for services as specified, providing an appropriation and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom is referred Senate File 12 engrossed Vietnam War Commemoration-2, respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Allen, Blake, Kennedy, Eklund, Walters. Those who voted no, Representatives Campbell, Laux, Reeder, and Dave Zwanisser, further reviewed by your Committee Number 2 Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 12 engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do not pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Nicholas, and Stubson. Representative Moniz voted no, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Zwanisser?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 12 do pass. And I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And ladies and gentlemen, I'll go ahead and address the Standing Committee Amendment. Basically, there's an appropriation that they can only give it out in increments of $5,000, and the amendment just takes care of that portion if they give it out in weird amounts for that last amount to be matched dollar for dollar. And with that, I call for the question.
You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor, please say aye. Opposed, say no. The ayes have it. Back to on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And for further explanation on the bill, I will turn it over to the fine Representative Walters.
Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill really comes about. A year ago, we passed a bill to designate a certain interstate that runs north to south, terminates in the city of Bison. saying welcome home to our Vietnam veterans. And this bill is really a continuation of that. There's a nationwide effort to try and put together stories to commemorate the tragedies and the successes and the all that came about from the Vietnam War. And through this designation and through this contribution, the state of Wyoming, the 17,000, roughly 17,000 Vietnam-era vets, would have a chance to let their stories be heard, would have their chance to discuss their stories, and for some it might bring closure, for others it just would be an opportunity to show everybody in our country how proud we are of them. And really that's what this goes about doing, is just sort of a thank you to those Vietnam veterans and a way of doing that. So I encourage your support, and thank you.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Representative Laux.
Mr. Chairman, I rise in opposition to this bill, and I want to tell you a little story about it. Okay, during the interim, we had a presentation on this. And by God, we all love people in the military, and we all love people that served in Vietnam, and it's scary standing here talking against something that seemingly is for them. But this isn't for them. This has to do with a company that came in and basically made a presentation for a book that somebody is producing and selling. And it was $80,000 originally is what the figure was on this. This book has nothing to do with Wyoming. It has to do with somebody making a lot of money selling these books, okay? And they're going to put an insert into it. That means they're going to open the cover and put a slip in there that tells a story about somebody from Wyoming, and a letter from the governor is going to go in there, too. We don't even know if the veterans want this book or not. And if they want to do this, the money needs to be raised privately, and all of us can chip into it. And that's my story. Thank you very much. Vote no.
Any further discussion? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to provide a little additional cover. I'm not on this committee. I haven't looked at the book. But I do know that we have a state archive program that would certainly be great if they wanted to go around and take people's oral stories and record them. That would be wonderful. And just to add to the cover, I will say that in voting against this, I am a military wife. I am a military sister-in-law. I am a military mother-in-law. I am a military daughter-in-law. My father was in World War II. My grandfather was in World War I. I had relatives in the Civil War, the Revolutionary War, and the French and Indian War, and I vote against the bill.
Any further discussion? Representative Greer.
I just do want to comment. Very, very rarely do you see something come out of Standing Committee Number 2 with the recommended do not pass, and it was from the speaker 2 ago from me. Same story that we received. Is this was, in my estimation, a sales job. So I'm against this bill.
Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The speaker earlier was correct. We did have a presentation during the interim that discussed how one way this could happen. In this bill, it is not delineated that we will be doing this through this national organization. The national organization is a nonprofit, and that is just one way that it could go about. There's a paper in the center of the state that is also compiling these same stories. Maybe that's the route the Commission on Veterans might end up using. This bill does not delineate how that has to take place. It just allows for an appropriation, and it's an appropriation to say thank you to those military veterans from the Vietnam War, many of whom came back to this country not with a thank you, not with an open hand, an open hug from all of us, but rather a slap in the face or a spit on their chest because the country wasn't pleased with the job they had done. And so this is our chance to say thank you for the job they did.
Is there any further discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Zwanitzer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate file number 12 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
The noes have it. Pursuant to House Rule number 6-6B, the bill having failed a voice vote, a standing division vote is required. All those in favor, please stand. Those opposed, please stand. More than five.
Having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Allen. Baker. Baldwin. Barlow. Berger excused. Blackburn. Blake. Burkhart. Bird. Campbell. Kennedy. Clem. Connolly. Dayton. Edmonds. Edwards. Eklund. Escobel. Freeman. Gay excused. Greer. Halverson. Harshman. Harvey. Hunt. Yagi. Jennings. Kasparik. Kinner. Kirkbride. Croker. Crone. Larson Lloyd. Larson Dan. Lindholm. Lockhart. Laux. Madden. McKim. Miller. Moniz. Nicholas. Northrup. Paxton. Pelkey. Petroff. Pipirinen. Pinnell. Reeder. Schwartz. Summers. Steinmetz. Stubson. Throne. Walters. Wilson. Winters. Swanitzer Dan. Swanitzer Dave. Mr. Speaker. Harshman excused. I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 6 aye, 51 no, 3 excused.
Pursuant to House Rule 6-6B, Senate File Number 12, having failed a roll call vote, is indefinitely postponed. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File Number 24. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 24 from Education, an act relating to school finance, extending supplemental at-risk financial assistance to early childhood education programs, and for an effective date. Mr. Chairman of Committee Number 4, Education, to whom referred Senate File 24, respectfully reports saying back to the House for the recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Freeman, Hunt, Yagi, Kinner, Northrup, Paxton, Pipirinen, Somers, and Throne, signed by Representative Northrup, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Northrup?
I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 24 do pass, and I will explain the bill. This bill will allow districts to be able to use another grant program that is presently used for summer school and extended day intervention. It's primarily aimed at at-risk students. So what's an at-risk student? An at-risk student are those that are in risk of academic failure. Generally speaking, statutes talk in terms of not performing at proficient levels, but the expenditures are generally a local control issue. There are three indicators for this statute. One of them is an English language learner. Next one's free and reduced. And the third, which is going to happen real quickly here, mobility. The parameters are sideboards on the expenditure of those funds. They include the identification of the population to be served, programs to be utilized, and learning plans for the students. Districts are required to apply for these funds and show the expenditures prior to the reimbursement. Districts have to apply for the funds with the department immediately preceding the succeeding school year session and subsequent school year for the childhood education. At the bottom of page 3, it says 100% of the amounts are actually expended on the district for the education and intervention will only be allowed. And G on page 4 says it's on a year-round basis for the purposes of those qualifying in financial assistance. J on the bottom of page 4 is that it has to occur annually on or before the department will show a report to the Joint Education Committee. That pretty much wraps up. I'm ready for questions.
We have discussion on the bill. Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a question, and
And really, so what we're doing is we're taking the, I'm just reading from page 1, line 14, the Supplemental At-Risk Financial Assistance Program that's used for summer school and extended day intervention and remediation programs. And now we're expanding that to include early childhood education. And so I guess a couple questions is number one, is this pot of money for this assistance program, is it big enough to have now early childhood education? And I guess, and that troubles me a little bit, and here's the reason why. Because down the road, I think that what this body will hear is, well, we need more money for this early childhood education. You know, we've all heard the phrase of getting your foot in the door, and I think that's what this possibly is. But the second thing is, and I just want to make sure that this is clear, this would be for those who are pre-kindergarten. So we're talking about, what, 3, 4, 5-year-olds? And I guess that's where I would like some information. Thank you.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Folks, I think we have a big question on pre-K preschool education in the state. And having worked with the groups that do the developmental preschools and look at the funding around there, we've got Head Start that's under Department of Workforce Services. We've got the preschool and daycare under DFS. We've got the Department of Education that's responsible for early education. And we know that management audit is currently looking on how we have, and we've got a pot full of funds out there that we're using, both federal and state. We've just heard how tight funding is, and this may be, if I'm hearing correctly, this may be federal funds that are out there, but is that the position we want our K-12 schools to do? Do we want them to start now performing preschool services? And it's policy decision, but I think we already have institutions out there that are providing preschool services that could maybe access those same grants if that's what we want to do. So I'd encourage you to be cautious. I'm going to vote no.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you.
You'll be next.
So the good representative from across the hill from me is correct. There is a lot of, I guess, agencies out there that have a little bitty piece of early childhood. But what this is, all this is doing is giving districts more local control, more flexibility in how they use this pot of money. This pot of money is generated from at-risk students based on K-12 population, not early childhood. This just gives, there's already districts out there that are doing some early childhood things, and all this really does is give them the flexibility to utilize this other pot of money if they choose. They may choose to just maintain their existing programs, you know, with after school and summer school, or maybe they can find other dollars from somewhere else to do some of that and then use some of this money for pre-K. So all it does is provide more flexibility to districts, and it's a local control thing. It's not pushing early childhood down anyone's throat.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It may not be pushing it down people's throat, but it sure is offering an awful enticing carrot. This represents a giant change from our past policy, because we're essentially opening it up so that we're going to be paying for another grade based upon some subjective measure of at risk. And if you just look at it, I've already. If you go down to F here, okay. If you go to line 13, it says, "This is talking about how it pays you," and it says a grant model contained a component equal to 15% of one full-time equivalent teacher position for every 30 at-risk students, as defined, and that's existing language. And then subject to a minimum per district of a 50% of a full-time equivalent teacher. And then, so then you think, well, it isn't going to cost too much. And then you get to the bottom here, and it says, distributions to each district shall be equal to 100% of the amounts actually expended by the district for early childhood education and intervention and so on and so forth. So you tell me, what school district wouldn't bite on that? This is a budget breaker, and we had reports when we went over the budget that the worst case basis in the next biennium, not this one, but the next one, we could be $500 million in the red in the foundation program. This is not the time to be expanding into these grandiose future funding obligations.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand that the answer to my question is coming up, but my question was, there's no fiscal note, so where does the money come from? My second question has to do with the definition of at risk. I understand that there's some obvious answers to that, but I wonder also if at risk doesn't mean unplaced, that families are waiting till they're 5 years old to put them in government schools. So I'd like a real broad explanation of at risk.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. So to the good Chairman of Revenues, this does not expand a dollar more. I'm going to read F for you. Maximum financial assistance under this section shall be determined for each applicant district as if the education block grant model contained a component equal to 15% of one full-time equivalent teacher for every 30 at-risk students within the district as determined by WS 21-13309 MVA, subject to a minimum per district amount equal to 50% of one full-time equivalent teacher position. That's current language. That money is all generated based upon the K-12 population, current funding population. All this does is expand that to allow early childhood to be a piece of this categorical grant. This is a categorical grant that's generated off of at-risk populations in the K-12 structure. So you're going to have a pot of money, and then this just adds one more opportunity, one more piece of flexibility for districts to use that pot of money. It is not new dollars.
Chairman Northrup.
Thank you. I'd just like to do a little bit more on that. The three indicators, as I said, are English language learners. That's one of the at-risk items. Another one is the group free and reduced, because you're talking about the poor and the needy. And the next one you're talking about is the group that moves around a lot, the mobility. Now, in our district, it's used for speech. Some kids come to school and have poor speech patterns, and they use it for their speech. Some others use it for other things like vision. So there's lots of at-risk items that you can use it for. But in statute, it says ELL, free and reduced, and mobility. There's presently $7 million in this grant that's not ever been used. It's a federal grant that we're looking at. We're just trying to acquire those dollars to use them.
Representative Kinner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to answer the good Chairman of Revenues and my neighbor's question about what districts might not take advantage of this, and that would be the one that I represent, because they're using their funds in this regard for after school and for summer school programs. So they would be one example of a district not taking advantage of it. But we did hear some great testimony that there are a couple of other districts, one actually adjacent to the one I just spoke about, that actually would like this, because they feel that there are some at-risk kids in their area that could take advantage of this, and they're not currently using all of their after-school or summer school dollars, and this would give them the flexibility of doing that. We also heard about another program that utilized the bus and went around to families and had the mom or the dad or some family relative come onto the bus with these children and have a great success in terms of providing an opportunity for them right there in their own neighborhoods. So anyway, I just wanted to explain that there are some folks interested in the expansion of these currently proposed dollars. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Klim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll keep it brief. On and against, this really is a policy decision. We have a pot of money here for at-risk assistance for certain criteria, and what we're doing is expanding that criteria. And it may not be next year or the year after that, but at some point that pot of money is going to go down. The state is going to be asked to pick up the slack, and then we're going to be in the business of early childhood education. That's number one. Number two, it's been told that we already have a lot of early childhood education programs out there, whether it be Head Start or daycare or something to that effect. That's number two. Number three, we've heard, and you've seen it in your emails, in fact, there was one, and I know I can't mention her name, but she's up from the Bighorn area, I guess I could say, an expert in this field, a doctor, quite the pedigree, and she says that these early childhood education programs, by and large, do not work. Now, there's always exceptions, sure, but she says this isn't the way to go. And so for those following reasons, I would urge you to vote no.
Representative Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I'm reading through this, and I think I'm on and against this, but the at-risk, I think I've heard several different definitions as to what could be considered at-risk, and I'd just like a little more clarification to that. Is it determined developmentally, financially, emotional, other criteria? It sounded like it could be very vague by the district.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you. I have a follow-up question to this funding thing. I think I heard somebody at the mic say that this isn't going to increase the amount of use of funds. And then I looked at line number 21 on page 3. It says, distributions to each district shall be equal to 100% of amounts actually expended by the district for early childhood education and whatever else it is, intervention programs. Now, I don't know what 100% means if it doesn't mean that whatever they do is kind of like our transportation apparatus. They send us a bill and we send them 100%.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This goes back, in my mind, to local control. Basically, I don't have the statute in front of me, but at-risk students have already been talked about in the debate, and this, I think, is pretty clearly defined. The second thing is there's no new money, but school districts find themselves in a situation of either or what are we going to do? There is a lot of private money to help with preschool education. If the district has even a little bit of money to use as a match, they probably can bring something into their district where it'll help their kids become school ready. I would recommend that you pass Senate File 24.
Representative Piperina.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate our good chairman of education who defined what at-risk students were. I supported this bill because there was no funding attached to it here. That it was a local control issue, and that school board can decide whether they want to use those funds for this early childhood program, the after-school program, or the summer program. I do have one question for my good chairman, though, and it's been asked by some others here. How do we define pre-kindergarten? Is pre-kindergarten 4-year-olds, is what we're referring to in this bill? Or are they looking from birth through 4? That's one thing I'd like to see in the bill is to define which children is the bill, What age of the children is the bill referring to?
Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I grabbed the statute, so I was reading it real quick, and I haven't found the part that comes out and explicitly says what at-risk is. But it starts out and says Supplemental At-Risk Financial Assistance Program for the Summer in School and Extended Day Intervention and Remediation Programs is established to augment resources contained within the Education Resource Block Grant Model for addressing needs of students who are not performing at proficient levels and shall provide financial assistance to districts for the provision of intervention and remediation instruction to academically at-risk students beyond the required school year specified by Wyoming Statute 214-301 and 2113-307-AII. Okay. So, once again, it goes back to what I had said, that we're looking at the three indicators for at-risk, which is the ELL, free and reduced, and mobility. Those are the three that are in statute. Districts use other things for what they want, and that's why that's defined in that way. The Bridges grant has $7 million in it that's not being used. As far as the age group, it's up to the districts to decide. It's a local control issue. It's up to your district to decide what they want to do with it. We're just providing them the opportunity to do that. Thank you.
Any further discussion on the bill? Question has been called. All those in favor of Chairman Northrup's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 24 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
The noes have it. Pursuant to House Rule 6-6B, the bill having failed a voice vote, a standing division vote is required. All those in favor, please stand. Having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
No, it's okay. Allen.
No.
Baker.
No.
Baldwin.
No.
Barlow.
No.
Berger, excused. Blackburn.
No.
Blake.
Aye.
Burkhart.
No.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell. Kennedy,
aye.
Clem,
no.
Connolly,
aye.
Dayton,
aye.
Edmonds,
no.
Edwards,
no.
Eklund,
no.
Escobel,
aye.
Freeman,
aye.
Gay, excused, Greer,
no.
Halverson,
aye.
Harshman,
excuse.
Harshman, excused, Harvey,
no.
Hunt,
aye.
Yagi,
no.
Jennings,
no.
Kasparik, Kinner, Kirkbride, Croker,
no.
Crone,
no.
Larson Lloyd,
no.
Larson Dan,
no.
Lindholm,
no.
Lockhart,
no.
Laux,
no.
Madden,
no.
McKim,
no.
Miller,
no.
Moniz,
no.
Nicholas,
no.
Nicholas,
no.
Northrup,
no.
Paxton,
no.
Pelkey,
no.
Petroff,
excused.
Petroff excused, Piperinen,
no.
Pinnell, Reeder,
no.
Schwartz,
aye.
Summers,
aye.
Steinmetz,
no.
Stubson,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Walters,
no.
Wilson,
no.
Winters,
no.
Zwanitzer Dan,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Hunt, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 21 aye, 35 no, 4 excused.
Pursuant to House Rule 6-6B, Senate File Number 24, having failed a roll call vote, is indefinitely postponed. Mr. Majority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Quick privilege.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a friendly reminder, Friday, 5 o'clock, we have 20 bills ahead of us, and we are rolling until we are done or new to it. So keep it in mind. Thank you.
Chairman Harvey. Oh, you're ready for the next. All right. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File. Representative Dayton, do you have...
I'm waiting.
Okay. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File number 43. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 43 from Labor. An act relating to the authority of the Department of Workforce Services updating statutory references related to the Workforce Investment Act of 1998 and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom is referred Senate File 43 engrossed, Workforce Investment Act statutory reference amendments, respectfully reports same back to the House for the recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye. Representatives Baldwin, Barlow, Dayton, Edmonds, Harvey, Kasperic, Larson, Schwartz, and Wilson. Signed by Representative Harvey, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Harvey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 43 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments, and I would turn the explanation over to Representative Dayton.
Representative Dayton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. SF-43 was brought to us by the Department of Workforce Services. This bill is an updating of references in our statutes relating to the 1998 Workforce Investment Act, which now must be referenced as the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, which was approved July 22, 2014. If we do not make these statutory updates, many of our programs would then be out of federal compliance and put us at a risk for losing funding. Some of the programs mentioned by the department are vocational rehab, which currently receives $9,248,000 in federal funding, programs providing a variety of career placement opportunities, and receives $3,500,000 in federal funds, as well as youth services programs designed to provide pre-employment services for individuals on the DD waiver program. I ask for your favorable consideration and stand for questions.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Harvey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File number 43 do pass, please say aye. All those opposed say no. Senate File has passed.
The next Mr. Bill, Chairman.
Speaker Pro Tem Stubson.
Mr. Chairman, I have been assured that if we go ahead and break now and have a long day on Monday, you will all be in much better humor. And I am taking those promises, and I'm going to hold you to them on Monday. But with that, Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say no. The motion carries. I get out of the way now. Mr. Speaker.
What are you? What do we have?
Reading clerk will read the committee of the whole report.
Mr. Speaker, your committee of the whole having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. Senate File 41, amended. And further amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 32, amended. And further amended. And further amended. Recommended do pass. Senate File 63. Recommended do pass. Senate File 9. Recommended do pass. Senate File 12. Amended. Following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. Senate File 24, following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. Senate File 43, recommended do pass, signed by Representative Winters, Chairman.
Representative Winters.
Mr. Speaker,
Mike.
Mr. Speaker, I move adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. Messages from the Senate.
Message number 208, Mr. Speaker. The Senate did concur on House amendments to the bill listed below. Senate File 30, Initiative Review Process, Eyes 27, Nose 3, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 209, Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendments to the bill listed below. Senate File 38, Data Management Policies, Eyes 29, Nose 1, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 210, Mr. Speaker, Senate File 42, Occupational Therapy Practice Act. The Senate failed to concur on House amendments to the bill listed above. By the vote indicated, Eyes 0, Nose 30, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 211, Mr. Speaker, the President appointed the Senate conferees to meet with a like committee number 1 from the House on amendment to Senate File 42. The Senate conferees are Senator Boner, Chairman, Senator Case, Senator Scott. The Senate requests the House appoint a conference committee number 1 to meet with a like committee from the Senate to report recommended amendments to the bill for final consideration by both houses. Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 4, Education, to whom it referred, Senate File 14, Engrossed, Student Data Privacy and Transparency, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye. Representative Freeman, Hunt, Kinner, Paxton, Summers, and Throne. Those who voted no, Representative Jaggi, Northrop, and Pieperinen, signed by Representative Northrop, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 4, Education, to whom it referred, Senate File 49, Engrossed, Payment for Educational Services, reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Freeman, Hunt, Jaggi, Kinner, Northrop, Paxton, Pieperinen, Summers, and Throne, signed by Representative Northrop, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 4, Education, to whom is referred Senate File 97, Student and School Safety Call Center, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Freeman, Kinner, Northrop, Paxton, Summers, and Throne. Those who voted no, Representatives Hunt, Jaggi, and Pieperinen, signed by Representative Summers, Vice Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom it referred Senate File 101, Public Health Laboratory Fees, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baldwin, Barlow, Dayton, Edmonds, Harvey, Kasperic, Larson, Schwartz, and Wilson, signed by Representative Harvey, Chairman.
We're at that business of signing enrolled acts. The first enrolled act for our consideration is enrolled act number 6. The reading clerk will read the enrolled act.
I'm sorry.
Enrolled Act Number 6 from Original House Bill 31, an act relating to Uniform Securities Act.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 6 being Original House Bill 31. I have so signed. The next act is Enrolled Act Number 7. The reading clerk will read the act.
Enrolled Act Number 7 from Original House Bill 88, an act relating to the administration of government.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 7 being Original House Bill 88. I have so signed. The next Enrolled Act is Enrolled Act Number 8. The reading clerk will read the act.
Enrolled Act Number 8 from Original Bill 54, an act relating to labor and employment.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 8 being Original House Bill 54. I've so signed. The next Enrolled Act is Enrolled Act Number 9. The reading clerk will read the act.
Enrolled Act Number 9 from Original Bill 46, an act relating to workers' compensation.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 9 being Original House Bill 46. I've so signed. The next act is Enrolled Act Number 10. The reading clerk will read the act.
Enrolled Act Number 10 from Original Bill Number 20, an act relating to state public purpose investments.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 10 being Original House Bill 20. I've so signed. The next act is Enrolled Act Number 11. The reading clerk will read the act.
Enrolled Act Number 11 from Original House Bill 28, an act relating to the Municipal Solid Waste Facility Cease and Transfer Program.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 11 being Original House Bill 28. I've so signed. The next act is Enrolled Act Number 12. The reading clerk will read the act.
Enrolled Act Number 12 from Original House Bill 52, an act relating to school facility projects.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 12 being Original House Bill 52. I've so signed. The next act is Enrolled Act Number 13. The reading clerk will read the act.
Enrolled Act Number 13 from Original House Bill 32, an act relating to insurance regulation.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 13 being Original House Bill 32. I've so signed. The next act is Enrolled Act Number 13.
Enrolled Act Number 13 from Original Senate File 10, an act relating to civil procedure.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 13 being Original Senate File 10. I've so signed. The next act is Enrolled Act Number 12. The reading clerk will read the act.
Enrolled Act Number 12 from the Senate from Original File, Senate File 11, an act relating to military department.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 12 being Original Senate File 11. I've so signed. The next act is Enrolled Act Number 11, the Senate. The clerk will read the act.
Enrolled Act Number 11 from the Senate, from Senate File 21, an act relating to mine product taxes.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 11, Senate, being Original Senate File 21. I've so signed. The next act is Enrolled Act Number 10, Senate. The reading clerk will read the act.
Enrolled Act Number 10, Senate, from Original Senate File 29, an act relating to administration of government.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 10, Senate, being Original Senate File 29. I've so signed. The next Enrolled Act is Enrolled Act Number 9, Senate. The clerk will read the act.
Enrolled Act Number 9, Senate, from Senate File 103, an act relating to administration of government.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 9, being Original Senate File 103. I've so signed. The next act is Enrolled Act Number 14, Senate, the reading clerk will read the act.
Enrolled Act 14 from original Senate File 19, an act relating to public funds.
I'm about to sign it. Enrolled Act number 14, Senate, being original Senate File 19. I've so signed. Next act is Enrolled Act number 15, Senate. The reading clerk will read the act.
Enrolled Act number 15, Senate, from original Senate File 47, an act relating to criminal history records.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act number 15, Senate, being original Senate File 47. I've so signed. The next act is Enrolled Act number 16, Senate. The reading clerk will read the act.
Enrolled Act number 16, Senate, from Senate File 15, an act relating to the Hathaway Scholarship Program.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act number 16, Senate, being original Senate File 15. I have so signed. Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, that clears the deck.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd move that the House adjourn until 10 a.m. on Monday, February 29th, which is Leap Day.
You've heard the motion. Well, committee announcements before we adjourn. Representative Hunt.
Real quick, Mr. Speaker, just let's hold together here for another 2 minutes until we have a quorum on the floor. We're dangerously close to losing our quorum, and then we wouldn't be able to adjourn, and then the rest of it that are still stuck here would be stuck here till Monday, I guess.
Yeah, I would not be in a good mood by then. Representative Kasparek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your joint minerals number 9 will meet on Monday, February 29th, 15 minutes after noon recess in Jonah 37 to discuss interim topics.
Chairman Zwanzer Dan.
Your joint committee number 7 will meet Monday, February 29th at 12:15 in Jonah Room S18 to discuss interim topics.
Representative Coker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your joint judiciary committee number 1 will meet Monday, February 29th at noon recess in H38 to discuss interim topics.
Chairman Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. 2 announcements. Your Select Committee on Legislative Technology and Process will be meeting on interim topics in room S19 upon adjournment on Monday, February 29th. And your Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will be meeting on interim topics at 8 a.m. on Tuesday, March 1st in room H38.
Chairman Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee education number 4 will meet upon noon recess for to discuss House-related interim subjects, and then we're going to meet that night after adjournment with the Senate and beat out the rest of them. Thank you.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your joint committee labor will meet Monday upon adjournment in John Room 37 to discuss interim topics.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Joint Transportation will meet Monday upon adjournment in Jonah Room L51. Also, your Select Committee on Tribal Relations will meet March 1st, 2016, at Room S18. Interim topics. Thank you.
You've heard the motion to adjourn until 10 a.m. Monday. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. We're adjourned until 10 a.m. Monday.